Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast. Yeah, so excited. You hear my voice. Always excited like this. Today, for the new listeners, for the new people joining us today, we are a weekly film podcast where we list, discuss, sometimes fight, not physically, but verbally. We make lists. We make our top five lists, depending on what genre we're talking about that week. Today we're talking about Westerns. And yeah, that's what we do. I'm one of your hosts, Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
And I'm Kevin.
And Adam Scott, not the Adam Scott. Sometimes I get emails still. Is it the Adam Scott from what is the show?
Parks and Rec?
No, what is the
Party Down.
Party Down. And I'm like, no, not that
nope,
guy.
Not we don't not have me. To do.
I'm doing Party Down for Halloween this year.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be super easy and comfortable.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But everyone's going to know what it is.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
Now and, I feel like I should do that too, just to mess with people.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not Adam Scott from Party Down.
You should go as Adam Scott from Party Down. So today we have guests, and to, you know, apropos not only to the topic, but yeah, anyway. I don't know where I was going with that little rant.
I think you were going to say because he's got something coming out
yeah,
soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's introduce him. It is Rick Maddox.
Hello, and thank you, Ricardo. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming out to Thunderdome Studios. Welcome to Thunderdome.
It's okay. Everybody gets to leave.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one person leaves. So you're here because you have a web series coming out on the – coming out. I guess – do you call it coming out when it's on the internet or like
– it's premiering
it's
on
splashing.
The internet.
What do you call that? It's we should find a word.
Splashing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Splashing.
I don't like... As a marketer, I would say no to that.
Okay.
Term.
If the internet is a web, what would it be? The internet is a web. The World Wide Web.
Landing.
It's landing.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah.
So your
Sticking,
series...
maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. So Rick has a web series, a Western web series. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, the project is called Dead Men, the Series, and it takes place in the late 1800s in the southern Arizona territories. It's a classic revenge tale of a young man who basically loses his entire family over greed, over a quartz vein that him and his father had worked on some land that they had acquired, and he has to basically be forced into not only avenging his father, but trying to protect his land from, you know, a lot of greedy people within the town who have eavesdropped around the, you know, the assay office and found out that there's some gold there in their property.
Interesting. And how long are the episodes?
We're starting out with the first five episodes are going to be roughly around 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then the last five episodes are going to be closer to 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Because a lot of the web series, like, sometimes they get to tend to get a little longer. And for a web series, you like you want it to be, like, quick. And I like that.
Well, yeah, because the idea is, like, you know, look, people are busy. And yeah, when they're at their lunch break and they're like, you know, I'm going to wolf down my sandwich. I got 5 minutes for episode three of Dead Men. Like, oh, I want to see what happens next. Like, they ended last episode with a horse chase. And now I want to see where they pick up, you know, what happens. So we designed it to be short in the first half. And by that time, you know, people will hopefully be interested in watching the rest.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have a total of 10 episodes?
Yes, 10 episodes.
Pretty cool. And then where did you shoot this web series at?
We shot this in and around Cochise County, southeast Arizona, right outside of Tombstone, around the Dragoon Mountains, and at the old western town Gammon's Gulch.
Oh, nice.
So right kind of within, I'd say, 20-mile radiuses of each other.
Pretty cool. And what – so you wrote – directed?
Royston Ennis is the director and co-creator and my partner in Dead Men. I'm also the co-creator, writer, and then Saddle Creek Films produced it, which is my production company.
And what did you shoot on? If you don't mind me asking.
We shot on the red, actually. Oh, nice. We shot on two reds, a red Epic and just a red Scarlet for kind of our secondary shots and moving shots.
How did you like shooting on that? Have you shot anything else?
You know, we've played around with a few different things. We shot a Western called Valley of Death that mm-hmm. we did. It was the first thing Roy and I ever worked on together. And, 3 days of filming, 5-page script and $500 budget. Yeah. And we shot on the 7D on that. And I like the 7D a lot, especially I think it's for the slower. It does the slow motion stuff.
Yeah.
The 5D Mark II is great as well. But the new Canon C300s, mm-hmm. I think they are. I wasn't a big fan of those. We had those at the beginning of the shoot, and they just weren't working. Mm-hmm. So we brought in the Reds, and the Red is fine as long as you keep the cooling gels mm-hmm. to kind of lay over the camera brain to keep it nice and cool. You can shoot in the desert all day pretty much, and we were running about 12-hour days in next to, breaking 100 every day.
Oh, wow.
Heat. It was insane. Waters. I mean, as a producer, some of the biggest production was the water. I mean, I had no idea. I mean, 10 cases of water almost like every day. It was
wow.
nuts. It was nuts. So definitely more prepared for that for season two.
And how are you guys? Are you guys planning a season two?
Oh yeah. Oh no. This is kind of a 5-year module here. We're we're talking to quite a few distributors right now. We don't know where it's going to go. I mean, it's definitely on the web somewhere, but we might have an exclusive thing that we do with one of the bigger websites. I mean, I don't know, or we might feature it on our website. I mean, we have a few options to play mm-hmm. with here. So. I think the long-term thing is just to garner as many views as we can and advertisement and all that jazz. But we're going to continue to shoot regardless of if someone picks it up to a TV show, great. If not, we're going to keep rocking. We're going to keep doing it. So
nice. And what besides, I mean, the cameras overheating, what were some of the major, hurdles you had to jump over?
I don't know if we have enough time. Let me just pick maybe three. I think the biggest thing, I mean, sometimes the wind
wow.
would really, yeah. I mean, you could bolt down as much equipment as you wanted, but the wind would just, I mean, knock things over, rip through things. And some days it was unbearable. We'd have to break for a little bit. So definitely the wind, I guess the elements, the sun, I'll include that as well with that, just the elements of just nature. I mean, the sun, if you weren't wearing multiple layers and putting on sunscreen, I mean, it would sneak up on you. And if you got burnt one day, you're not in a good way. I'd say, the other thing was, the horses, there's two things that are the hardest things to work with in the movie making industry, and that's kids and horses. And that proves to be true, or not only horses, but just livestock animals
or monkeys
and, or monkeys. Exactly. And we had a lot of those flying monkeys. And the Wicked Witch of the East makes an appearance. She's just a guest star though.
I'm just throwing an idea out. For season four,
there's just saying.
There's a Planet of the Apes type thing, and
yeah.
there's monkeys on fucking horses shooting six shooters.
I'm telling you.
Quit stepping on my toes.
But, the horses, for the most part, were really good, were really gentle and easy, kind of blue-blooded. But there were times when you just needed to get that one shot before lunch, and the horse was getting finicky and moving all over the place. And there's nothing, I mean, you try to keep them as still as you can, but we had one, a roan mare named Brandy that, you'll see in the trailer that rears up in one of the scenes. She did that a lot. And thank God, our rider, James Albert Reeves, is a stuntman and a cowboy. He was able to hold his own. And there's some other really good shots of her rearing up on where the camera was right under her. I mean, it was the great thing is that they were such dangerous shots, but if you have the right people on the horses, you can get away with it, you know? So anyway, the third thing, I'd have to say, maybe like the, I'd say the C300, but that was, we only had that for a couple of days, but that was that held 2 days of production. And when it's about $4,000 to $5,000 a day you're spending, that can really cause you some stress.
Yeah.
I basically drove overnight to Phoenix to get the Reds for our next shot in the morning that we had for all of our extras for our town scene. That shot, you seen the trailer of us.
Yeah.
That was me leaving at 1 a.m. to go pick up the Reds and drive all the way back, loaded on Red Bulls, and get the cameras delivered by 6 a.m. So it's like, here you go, man. Those are just for those three. I could go on, but we could just leave it for those three.
And so you're the star of it, right?
I am.
You're the main. Mm-hmm. And now, how was it? Because now you're also producing. So how was that balancing? Like, hey, I got to be up all night, but then I got to be up. I got to be ready for 7 a.m. for my scene.
Yeah, you're asking. Wow, you're really getting to it, aren't you? Yeah, that's it was the hardest thing of my life. I've been a soldier. I've been overseas. That was hard. That was very hard. But this was a different level. Just because my passion, my career, my drive, everything was right there. My dream was happening. And I was getting to bed after our production meetings. I mean, we all, Royston Innes, Catherine Waterman, Rhett Swanson, we all were just taxed and way overworked and didn't have enough staff. We did it, but I know them as well. We were getting to bed at probably 12:30-ish, maybe somewhere around there. I had to get up at about 4:30 because I had to cook for the entire cast and crew. So wow. I had to cook breakfast. That was not easy. And thank God I had help from Shane Palmerton, former Marine Corps. He was a godsend to have on that set. Helped out a few days. Catherine Fernandez, who was one of our makeup artists for the latter part, came in and she started taking over for a little bit. But for the most part, it was me going to bed, getting 4 hours, throwing in a prayer before I get to bed, throwing in a prayer, barely mouthing the words, and getting up just taxed and beat. And I was drinking probably 3 or 4 Red Bulls during the day. I ended up testing my heart just to try it out, and I had hypertension.
Wow.
Like it was, I can't remember the numbers, but they were not good.
Yeah, Red Bull's not good for you.
No, I realized. Don't let Mark hear that. He was our promoter and the guy that sent me 15 cases of Red Bull.
Wow. Next time, Folgers.
We love Red Bull, Mark. We really do. I'll take it for the crew. It was very, very difficult having to produce and lead act. And thank God I had other producers helping. It was nuts. And I'm hoping that Roy, because I haven't seen the whole project yet, I'm hoping Roy has got the better cuts for the performance. Because there were times when I was walking in a shot and I can look and say, oh my God, I was thinking about if the craft service lady is going to be late again. Wow. And I had it was nuts. In season 2, I will hire a savvy, you know, strong-willed producer with good integrity to help out with all of us. Cause it just, I'll never do it again. I can't. Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, based on some of the scenes, it looks like you could have used the experience for what your character was going through, because you seem to go through quite a bit of trouble in this.
Well, that's a very interesting observation, because there were a few scenes that I literally just had to think about what was going on in my life in tears. And it's like chaos was there. Specifically, there's a shot where it's funny. It stirs in me even thinking about it. But there was a shot where I lose my father, and I didn't have anything left. And Roy's like, "Mate, we take him up there, pop the shot off." Yeah, it was we had our last day, by the way. I think we got off something. It was ridiculous. It was like 26 shots in 6 hours. It was unreal, because we all came together and we're like, "Look, if we don't get this done, we don't have Deadman," and it's that simple. And everyone, the crew, just dropped their egos. They dropped everything, and we all just pop, 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 pop. It was phenomenal. But that scene where I see Craig Oldfather, who plays Vance Edison, who was kind of modeled off Lee Van Cleef, by the way, kills my father, and he looks up there and clicks, and I'm like distraught. I was just thinking about everything. All the stuff going on in my life right now, and it was like chaos right there.
It's Craig, right? Craig Oldfather?
Craig Oldfather.
I know Craig Oldfather, and he has a Western name, doesn't he?
He does.
And he's old Craig Oldfather's farm.
Former Playhouse, too.
Yeah, that's where I know. So how many days of shooting did you have?
We had, after it was all said and done, I want to say it was about 16, between 16 to 18 days, I believe.
No, wow. So did you have that in mind? Did you write it by episode, or how did you go about writing your scripts? Did you go like the whole season?
We did the whole season, and Roy and I just love working with Roy, because we just, it's so odd how him and I think it's we're going in the same direction with writing with stuff. And I basically, I will write it. I'll bang it out and say, take a look, tell me what you think. And he'll look at it and say, okay, I like this. Let's switch this around. And he's right. Usually as a director, he's spot on about, you know, switching it around to, well, we need to take it a little this way. I'm like, oh yeah, right. So it's a very yes and relationship. Mm. And, I'll just write it. He'll look at it. He'll make a few tweaks. He'll write a few things in. I'm like, ah, got it. And then bam, I'll start going with it. So we very much, we feed off each other. It's a great synergy. And especially on set when we have the opportunity, because I mean, poor Roy, I mean, he was having to first AD. He was having to do so much other than just direct. I mean, he's a freaking champ. And that guy, I mean, he had very little time for me. He kind of had this kind of like, you know, you do your thing. I'm going to go do this. You make it work. Do what you do. And he'd walk off. And, you know, there are a few key moments where he really, if he wasn't getting what he wanted, he'll come up and, hey, mate, you know, and talk to me. I need you to go there. And that's all he needs to say to me. And I'm just, it's that kind of shorthand, I guess.
Now, did you guys, when you guys wrote it out, did you guys write it out as one, like, 12-hour movie? Or did you guys literally, like, break it down to episodes?
No, it was such a, I hate writing little episodics. I like writing more short to feature full length kind of stuff, but no, we broke it down. It was episode 1.1, episode 1.2, you know, obviously one being for season one, 1.3, 1.4, 1.5, and just little beginning, middles and end. You know, we have a biblical quote that we put up in black that kind of talks about what's going to happen. So I think you gotta show the grit of life. You're going to throw a biblical quote, that's fine, but don't, it's not fluffing rainbows. You show, like, you know, show a whore doing what she does. You show the real thing.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now you're talking my language. So you had the days of production. Now how many actual days were you out there? Just like scouting?
Oh, we had three different scouting trips. And it started, oh man, there were so many people that came on and got kicked off, kind of, so to speak. I mean, but I want to say, I can't remember the exact dates, but I know there were months apart where we went out for 2 days, talked to people, came back, and then we got to do this. We went back over there a couple days, talked to some other people. And finally there was a guy named Brent Rock, who plays Virgil Calhoun, who plays almost like my father's best friend and almost like my paternal father figure. He kind of takes over and teaches me how to, you know, he says it in the trailer. He's like, if you don't learn how to kill a man, you better learn fast. You're going to die. You know, he helped out so much with finding locations. I mean, it was a sense of trust, really, of us trying. Our whole pitch was like, look, guys, we're not, we know that the Hollywood people come in and they, you know, say, we're going to do this, and then here's money, so shut up. We don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. We want to start a new community-based way of filmmaking where you actually get to talk to the people, you get to know who they are, and you just be nice, be cool, be a cool human being, and work with them. And with that said, we came with that approach, and we talked to Brent about it and said, look, we're not trying to trash the property. We're trying to promote their property, which is why we have their, you know, promotions on our partners page to help them out. And just you know, establish a long-lasting relationship with these people. Even if we don't work with them again, help them out to say, look, this is what we did, and this is where we shot. So, and it's also encouraging to other Western filmmakers to say, look, I don't want to hide what I did. I'll tell you exactly what I did. I went here, I shot here, I had this color horse, and it was a chase scene, and we used the Bell livestock, Jesse Bell and Steve Bell and Joe Bell and all the Bell boys, and they were fantastic. And they just happened to really... All of the people there just really, they saw something in Roy and I and in the team and took a chance. And, you know, hopefully we don't let them down. Hopefully we start to generate some kind of popularity for Southeast Arizona. I don't know.
Yeah, that's really a good way of thinking and good way of filmmaking. Now, where can people go to find all the information about where the trailer? I know I saw the trailer, but is that where they go? Is it all on one website?
It's as of right now, I mean, other than the PR stuff, like the Facebook, there's a Dead Men the Series Facebook page. Other than that, there's, you know, www.deadmentheseries.com where you can get all the info. You can see the trailer, you can see the bios on the production team, you can see pictures, you can see some of the newspaper postings, And there's going to be more newspaper stuff going on. I mean, today was literally all day was just me on the phones talking to people at San Antonio, Austin, mm-hmm. just people that from my hometown that are really, really hungry. And they've seen the trailer and they want to just blast it. And, you know, who knows where it's going to go. But to find the information, just the website's going to be the best place.
And that's deadmentheseries.com.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And also you can go to our website and we'll have all the links. That's the listfilmpodcast.com, and we'll have the Vimeo trailer on there and all the links to the Facebook page and the website. Yeah, I trailed off there. Sorry. I went all... So, all right. Is there anything else you guys want to ask? You guys good?
I actually was interested in where the idea came from.
You know, it's interesting. There's a few spots, I guess, it was conceived. Royston Innes and I had worked on a play a while back called Old Glory. And I kind of took that part based on the idea that Roy was directing. I saw a lot of power in him, and he's very, very intense. And I like that. I run right into it. And based on that, we started a relationship. Well, flash forward, after working with him, prepping for auditions, you know, him and having his Mike Nichols background from New York, shadowing under him, which is very... I felt like I was back in New York when I'd go to his house and, like, work through auditions and stuff. But he told me, he's like, do you have any, like, Westerns or anything? You're from Texas, yeah? I'm like,
is he Eric Bana? He sounds a lot like Eric Bana.
No, I think Eric Bana's more like he's a little bit more back of the throat, like this.
There you go.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, could be worse. It could be like Melbourne. Or it could be you could be from the south. He could be like Gabriel Byrne. I don't know. I do voices, by the way. RickMaddox.com, shameless plug. But Roy, he had told me, he said, like, let me read, like, read some of your stuff. I said, okay. So I sent him this short script called Bear Territory, and it's pronounced like the French Baya, like Baya, whatever, B-E-X-A-R for Bear County, Texas. And I wrote this script, Bear Territory, and I sent it over to him, which we have not produced yet. It's in the works. We're probably going to extend it into a feature. But he loved it. He loved it. His favorite book is Lonesome Dove. I mean, I swear by Lonesome Dove. I mean, if Saddle Creek Films, if Roy and I, if all of us could get even close to what Lonesome Dove did, I would be very, very happy. But from that, Roy and I, he said, can you write something shorter? I said, yeah. I said, okay. I went off, wrote a Valley of Death, wrote it in about 48 hours, you know, give or take, and just torqued it a little bit and said, here's something simple about a man and his horse in nature and has to learn how to trust this woman. And, you know, simple, 5 pages. Gave it to Roy. He said, awesome, let's do it. Great. So we got together. Again, we had some people on that, you know, said one thing, didn't do it, so we weeded that out. We just pushed through. We got through it. We ended up using an Appaloosa that I ride pretty regularly up in Sunland Valley. And Buddy, it's a great horse. Very easy, very gentle. And there wasn't barely any galloping. I wrote that to, you know, make sure it was just very easy on the horse. So we just shot. We shot 3 full days. We kind of... Roy, he's such a genius. We had one of the cops come down. And he walked all the way out on this trail. This is more of a rugged trail. This isn't the Sunset Trail in Hollywood. This is like people die here regularly. I mean, it's crazy. You'll see, like, you know, the illegals crossing through. They'll wave to you and you'll wave, hey, no problems. I mean, this is like closest to the Old West you're going to find.
Yeah.
So the cop comes down and he looks down and he's like, "You guys can't be filming here." And Roy's like, "Oh, no, mate. We're taking these are wedding photos. Photos for the wedding. See, it's a Canon. It's a camera. You're just taking photos, right?" And he was like, cop just kind of sat there for a second. And Roy just played it out. He was like, "Oh, that's great, guys. It's going to look great for the wedding. Great. Just hold that pose. Excellent." It was so funny. Oh, and we're like sitting there trying not to crack a smile. And he goes, "All right, well, hey, congratulations." Cop walks off. I'm like, "Roy, you're a genius." So anyway, I'm sorry, I digress. But basically from Valley of Death, we watched it, and I thought, wow, this is the best thing I've ever done. Like, I just, on top of the primetime TV, all this. This is awesome. So from there, something kind of started in my gut. And I told Roy, like, dude, I think we got, like, we need to take this to the next level. We need to just take this further. So Roy and I both kind of agreed that Jesse Struthers in Valley of Death is kind of more season three of where Jesse will become, because he's pretty, he does some things in Valley of Death that you're like, oh, I mean, there's one scene in particular that just kind of hits you, that Jesse now wouldn't do that. The bright-eyed Jesse that you see in the trailer, he's innocent, running around scared, trying to learn how to kill a man. So that's kind of where Dead Men started. And from there, it was like, okay, well, let's go to the beginning of Jesse Struthers. Let's go to the very beginning. And then from there, Roy's, he gives me free rein to just be like, mate, go do your thing. Go do your thing, write, and then send it to me, and let's look at it and torque it and all that stuff. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
Neat. And so now have you guys like done like a show Bible where you know where like season five and where all the seasons are going or no?
You know, it's interesting. I get that question a lot, mainly from the execs. Like, so what's your outline here? Mm-hmm. No, I don't. Because it's kind of like, as lame as this may sound, it's kind of like running around in my head, the whole world. Like, mm-hmm. I can go back to that world and just start spitting it out. I do know that. Well, I can't tell you that because it's going to give away the ending of the
first. Don't tell us that.
I can't tell you, but I will say that the second season takes a pretty interesting turn for Jesse and his journey, because it's all about Jesse's journey of kind of spirituality, of becoming a man, of revenge. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of things, and I think a lot of men are going to be able to relate to his journey through all this. So,
mm-hmm. Awesome. Very cool. All right. So shall we move into what should we move into, guys?
I feel like we should just get into the list now. I just want to talk about Westerns. I don't care about movies I've seen. I don't care about Stream of the Week. I just want to talk about Westerns.
Well, let's talk about Stream of the Week. Does anybody have a recommendation?
I do. What is it? I just watched for the first time Bellflower on Netflix.
Talk about that real quick. I wanted to love it. I wanted to like be like, this is the greatest thing. I did love it for certain reasons. But the story kind of like freaked me out. Like I was like, what the F is going on?
It gets very psychological.
Yeah. I think that tripped me up. Like it's really weird if you had a couple beers in you. It's going to freak you out, right?
That's true. I saw it when it came out in theaters and I loved it. I don't know if either of you read my review back however long ago that movie came out.
Sometime last
year. But I loved that movie. Yeah, like I didn't know I just went in and was like, oh, I'll just go see this movie, Bellflower, whatever. And like I was like shaking when I left the theater. It just messed with me. It was so good.
It really does mess with you.
Well, I think that's why it's kind of put me. It makes me uneasy.
Well, I think if you were watching it under the influence, that's going to enhance. I mean, it's a crazy movie. It does really play with your mind. And if you're under the influence of something, it's going to really mess with your mind.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it starts off messing with you from the first place. Yeah. Oh, yes. It feels like this. Yes. Oh, it's just, it's little mumblecore, boy meets girl, fucking shit gets real. And what just happened?
Yeah.
Humongous come out of nowhere and just bitch slaps me?
Yeah. I did like, have you heard of this movie, by the way,
Rick? You know what? I haven't.
It's a really interesting movie. It's basically, it starts off as like your typical like,
it's a buddy movie.
It's like buddy movie mixed with like romantic comedy. So you're like, oh, this is weird. This is okay. And then all of a sudden it takes this like weird psychological turn. And there's like, the backdrop of the whole movie, these guys are prepping for the apocalypse. And they're building this like amazing car.
You can kind of see that there's something odd coming because the movie starts off with them like, all right, we got to build the perfect flamethrower. Yeah. Like that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like two friends, like two dorky, geeky white dudes, you're like, hey, let's go out to the desert and build a flamethrower and test it out.
Totally normal.
Yeah.
But then through the progression, it's like, all right, they're serious about preparing for the apocalypse. And like they glorify Lord Humongous from the Road Warrior. They're just like, we want to be Road Warriors when the end of the world comes.
Yeah. And the thing is, what I really like about the movie is that they really built a car. Like there's a car that throws like flames like 40 feet in the air. And they really built the car. This is a really, really low budget independent film. Mm-hmm.
They built the camera.
They built the two cameras that they shoot.
They made two cameras.
I would love to have that car at 8 a.m. going south on the 405.
And it was really interesting. And so,
Evan Glodell.
Yeah.
Evan Glodell.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something after the show about.
The one thing that I did get from the movie, and this is really stupid, is it's really his pickup line of "I'm building a flamethrower" is actually very unique. And I think if you were to say that to a woman, she wouldn't just walk away. She'd be very intrigued. If you're like, she's like, "Well, what do you do?" I'm building a flamethrower.
I feel like no matter what you said, like,
I think we should defer to Jenny on this one. Jenny, if you met someone and you asked them what they did, and they said that they're building a flamethrower, where do you gauge your reaction?
Would you run away, or would that be somewhat intriguing?
I would ask questions. That's okay. The first thing I would
do.
Well,
you wouldn't walk away, though. That's really
exactly.
No, I wouldn't walk away.
Say
it's very unique.
Say you work at McDonald's, right? And you don't want to get to that. You're like, before you get to the part where you're like, well, I work at McDonald's, you're like, well, I'm building a flamethrower, so it doesn't really fucking matter. Yeah. That's my priority. Working at McDonald's is just kind of what I do. While I build my flamethrower.
To pay the bills.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To pay for parts for the flamethrower.
Yeah. Yeah. So check that out. Bellflower, Stream of the Week, Netflix. All right, let's get to the list. Since Rick is our guest, we'll let him go first because I feel like there's going to be a lot of overlap. This was one of the hardest lists I've had to do because I feel like I've mentioned some movies prior to this episode. So let's just get into it. Rick, give us your number five.
Okay, my number five, not including the honorable mentions, I'll start with number five, would have to be John Ford's Fort Apache.
Ooh, it's a good one.
Yeah. I like that it was off. You went off the reservation on this with that one. I feel like it's something different. Something different.
Different for us.
Different for us, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not Clint Eastwood. I love it. I love where mm-hmm. it's going. Tell us a little, for people who haven't seen it, give us a little gist of it.
Well, it's John Ford, and Eastwood, obviously one of the masters of the Westerns, but John Ford as well, who teamed up with John Wayne. It's just a great story of basically what I really loved about it was, I mean, you have Ben Johnson, who was a real cowboy that literally packed up two horses in a trailer and went to Hollywood. And that's as real as it gets, and started getting picked up and doing the real stuff. You watch him ride, you watch the Duke ride, you watch all these guys. It's the riding. I look at a lot of the riding. I look at the stuff they've done, how they took the privates and they just in the army, and they literally trained them how to get on horses. And that scene is one of the best wild horse scenes where, I mean, my blood gets pumping when I see these cameras around wild horses and men scrambling in between the wild horses, and they're, you know, jumping on them, swinging on them. And it's just how freaking awesome. And seeing these guys that are riding bareback, that are hooking on, that are jumping over like little fences, cause they're training the horses to, you know, obviously jump over fences to with their lance and stuff. And, just incredible. I mean, and just the use of the natives. John Ford was very, very good about treating the natives right.
Yeah.
He would make sure that they were paid. He got people away from Hollywood. They would build camps. I mean, it would be remote. I mean, his whole idea was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to get out there and we're going to live the West and we're going to be way out. And just, you feel that from the characters, and you feel this essence of, especially Monument Valley, where he shot several films there. You just, the beauty of the wide shots he used with the valleys in the background and the landscapes. Wonderful, wonderful film.
Excellent. I like it. Anything else you guys want to add? That was a pretty good number five.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
I'm ready to go watch it right now.
Jenny, well, let's start off by saying that you haven't seen a lot of Westerns.
No,
overall.
I'm pretty.
So you're there. You only picked
on the
two
Westerns.
Movies.
I know. So I picked two. I'm going to rename them every time we come around. No, but I'm the one that's seen all the Westerns that everybody's seen.
Yeah.
Which is on fine. TV all the time. Yeah. Sorry, I apologize that I haven't seen very many. I'll get to it one day.
Hey, in making this list, I realized I haven't actually seen that many Westerns.
Yeah, me too.
So,
well,
no harm, no foul.
Yeah. Start with John Ford.
Throw it at us. What do you got?
Okay, wait. You're on the wrong thing.
Start with your number five. Don't start with your number three. Okay.
Well, I mean, she's only got two movies, so
she can start whenever.
Okay, I got this. So my number five, the main reason I watched this one, it was on TV all the time when I was a kid, and the main reason I started watching it was because of the guy in it. I was super obsessed with DiCaprio back in the day. And
I know which one this is.
I love this movie purely because I was obsessed with him so much that it just made the movie awesome. I don't even know if it would still be awesome today. I'm assuming it probably would be, but I'm talking about Quick and the Dead.
Yeah,
it is still awesome.
It is still awesome, yes.
Yeah.
If I could just say about the Quick and the Dead, I thought it was so awesome how Russell Crowe, who played the preacher, how he tried out for this part, he auditioned, and the execs or whoever it was basically saying, no, he's not a name, this and that. And I know Sharon Stone, DiCaprio, and someone else had basically fought to say, look, this is the guy. You got to cast this guy for this part. And I just, as an actor, I think those days are limited now, and I think that's so freaking awesome of Leo DiCaprio and Sharon Stone and all of them to say, no, this is our guy.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
awesome.
Seriously. And he was perfect for it.
He was.
He fit that role very well.
And this is Sam Raimi, correct?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. This is
You can tell by that one last shot.
Yeah. this is the only movie of his that doesn't feature his car. That really shitty beige colored car that he has in every single one of his movies.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's in like evil.
Ash's car.
The evil, yeah. Ash's car is in every single one of his movies. Army of Darkness.
It's probably in the background somewhere.
Yes. Well, no. And he said that if you look carefully, he's like, it's not in plain sight. It's out of focus, but it's in it. It's in it. So I haven't found it yet, though. This has a really amazing cast. The guy who stands out for me is Lance Hendrickson.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
I always love me some Lance, and he's amazing in this. Gene Hackman is the villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And, I think the only weak link in this movie is Sharon Stone, but whatever.
I think it's one of her better performances.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess I can agree with that. It works. Yeah.
All right, I'll give it to you guys.
Who would you have rather it been? If you could have picked
anybody
any
else.
Actress.
Really? No. I like
Meg
Sharon
Ryan.
Stone.
Yeah. You're like, I really wish Kristen Stewart was in Quick and the Dead.
Yeah. Holly Hunter.
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That would have been good.
Frances McDormand.
Frances McDormand would have been badass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, good way to start us off.
I don't know that she could have played like the sexy part, though.
Frances McDormand back in the day was a looker.
Yeah, she still can be.
She can.
Yeah,
I feel like they make her look all mommy.
They make her look
which, like,
not.
She can look hot.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true. Okay.
All right. I don't know. See, I'm having such a hard time because they're all my number one. So
you're a 5-way tie for number one.
Okay, I'll start off with. Okay. All right. Let's just get out of the way. Let's talk about the proposition. Is it anybody's list?
Oh. I mentioned it on the Outlaw list, so I was going to hold off on this one.
Anybody?
I figured someone else would have it, but I mean, it is. It's great.
Awesome.
It's like the baddest. It's just. It's like the Bellflower of Westerns.
Yeah. So basically, it's Guy Pearce. He gets caught by Ray Winstone, and he basically has like 9 days to find his older brother. By the way, Guy Pearce is an outlaw. His character is an outlaw. And he catches him. He says, well, you know, we'll give you the chance to kind of redeem yourself. Go find your brother 9 days or, you know, we'll kill your younger brother. And hilarity ensues. I don't want to give anything away. Amazing acting by every single one of those actors. And just I a couple weeks ago, I went to a screening of Lawless with Nick Cave and their director, John Hillcoat. And just the stories he told about this movie and like how they wrote it and how like the music involved in it, everything. I think everything is they kind of like I hadn't seen a modern Western in the last couple of years that was like this. Well, there's one other one, but
obviously.
Yeah. But this really kind of I like how. You know, foreigners are making these films. Really amazing. Really amazing work by these foreigners.
The grit, without giving anything away, especially the grittiness and rawness of that cabin scene towards the end, is just absolutely brutal, makes your skin crawl. And that is fantastic.
Yeah, and I feel like for a while, we got away from, like, dirty Westerns, meaning, like, everyone's, like, sweating. You know, like, this actor must smell, like, horribly bad. The sweat. Just like the grime on film, and I feel like this movie got back to that, back to Leone's kind of grit.
the reason I'm upset with myself for not having this on my list is because I feel like this is the closest thing to, like, this is the scariest Western. Like,
yeah.
It's the closest to a truly terrifying Western horror mashup.
Yeah.
Because Danny Houston is terrifying in this movie to me.
Yes.
And just, like, the setting is, it's just all very unsettling.
Why the hell are all the Houstons amazing? Like, every single one of the Houstons.
Well, I mean, they're raised by people that were amazing. So.
Oh, no, I was going to say they made a pact with the devil.
Oh, well, that could be it,
too. Oh, that too. Yeah.
The youngest Houston is on Boardwalk Empire. He plays the guy with a huffy face, and he's amazing in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Angelica Houston is his aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was in Lonesome Dove, and she's phenomenal.
Yes. So there you go. Bam. Come full circle, Lonesome Dove. Kevin, what's your number five?
Okay. So my number five is from 1962, and I went with The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Ooh.
Yes.
I love this movie. I had seen this after I had seen, like, The Searchers. I had seen, like, a lot of Ford movies by then, and I watched this movie, and I was a huge fan of Jimmy Stewart, and I think by this time I was a huge fan of John Wayne just because of all the work he had done with Ford, and I just love kind of the story, and I love the character that John Wayne is playing and how he is usually, I mean, he's usually got the very tough manly man thing, but he's when he's showing his heart and how he feels for Haley and how he feels kind of how he's losing that possible hope and that future that he had with her he plays that so well, and you just feel so much for his character in the film. And then just kind of the dilemma that James Stewart has to go through the film, where he's coming from the East and he's got this belief that you can have law in this land where there's no law at all. And it's, you take the law on yourself and you deal with things yourself. You don't bring lawyers or cops involved. You just take care of everything yourself. And how he has to learn a little bit that in this land, you kind of have to get a little dirty. And I really like that element. And then, of course, what Ford does with the camera and throughout the film is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good pick. I like the variety. All right. You. Adam Scott from Party Down.
I have no idea. I'm just going to randomly pick one because this is such a difficult list to make.
Why? Right? I feel like all... I'm going to just... Disclaimer, all my top five picks are my number one. They're just.
Well, yeah, it's like
I can't pick one.
There's this point where there's like five movies in a tie for number one. It's just like, can we do like a top 10? Because there's just again. So I realize that I haven't seen that many Westerns that I don't like. Is what the problem is.
Yes.
Yes.
So it'd be easier to just make a list of five Westerns I don't like.
Well, you haven't seen. Never mind. What is it? Texas Rangers.
Texas Rangers.
I've seen Texas Rangers.
You like it?
Dude, that's my number five.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. My real number five is Bad Girls.
I was like, wow, variety there.
No, right. No. Okay. For all seriousness, my number five, I'll just, let's see what we can do here. Let's go 1985, Silverado.
Yes.
Oh, good choice.
Lawrence Kasdan, again, a favorite. But the casts, Danny Glover, Kevin Kline, Kevin Costner, Scott Glenn,
Jeff Goldblum,
yes. Brian Dennehy, Jeff Fahey,
John Cleese.
John Cleese is great. Who else? The short woman.
You did list Kevin Costner.
I did list Kevin Costner.
I just feel like just the opening of this movie, how it opens up
in the cabin with just shootout right away,
and then
when you come out the door and it's just the wide open. I'm very Ford-esque. Plane shot, which is like, all right, I know what's happening now.
Yeah, and this is the scope of the film.
Yeah, yeah. It's there's just so much going on, and it's so big, and it's so much fun. Everybody seems to be having a really good time. Everyone seems to be enjoying working with each other a lot. Yeah. But just so many characters to get involved with, and just even the villains. You're like, oh, that guy's a dick, but I like that actor, and I like the guy, and I'm with him, but I'm not with him. Especially like John Cleese's character and Brian Dennehy. It's a fun movie.
Interesting. The stunts that were done with Kevin Costner, just so you know, that was his own paint horse. That was his very own horse, yeah. And when he's running off the roof, after that whore and jumps onto the horse, that's him jumping on the horse. I mean,
that's awesome.
That's like, you know, I won't get into Open Range, but I will say Kevin Costner, when he was in that role of the playful cowboy, the bright-eyed, smiley, good-looking cowboy, he was a hit with all the ladies, and it was just, it was his charm that really won him that part. And I mean, just incredible with the silver handles, the silver pistols, the ivory. I mean, great, fantastic.
Yeah, we had just that fun, cocky attitude. Yes. The part where he lets the two guys walk past him, and then he
I was thinking
and
that
and kills them both. Ah, it's so
awesome,
so good.
Well, good pick. I feel like there's variety. Nobody stepped on each other's toes yet.
Was this Kevin Costner's first big thing that he was known for?
No, his first big thing was actually as an extra in The Big Chill, as in the coffin.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't even
that's
have a speaking part.
His scene was cut.
Did, yeah.
There was a scene where they're all together that was cut.
Yeah,
but that was
that
supposed to be
that,
his
though.
Thing.
Yeah.
I just, and I know this because I just listened to an interview with Kevin Costner, and he's like, no, there was a scene. It got cut out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, damn it.
Wonder if it's on the DVD.
Well, maybe. It's not. They're waiting for the super duper Blu-ray special edition.
Big chill.
I'm sorry. 10-disc. Another scene I have to mention, though, is the Scott Glenn training scene. Where he's training, he's shooting so hard, he's like practicing his shooting, and then the guys show up like, you were practicing so hard, you forgot to save any bullets, and they just beat the shit out of him because he wasted all of his bullets.
Oh my god, I remember that.
And then Kevin Kline is a badass. I just can keep talking about this movie because everyone is so great. I think Linda Hunt. Is it Linda Hunt? The short one?
Yeah. I want to say it's Linda Hunt.
Okay.
Huntsville. No.
I'll remember it eventually.
Wait, are you thinking of Rosanna Arquette?
No, not the whore. She's the bartender that Kevin Kline like becomes friends with.
Oh, okay, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
This might be a little, this has nothing to do with Silverado, but every time I saw Romancing the Stone, I wanted to see that Western that she's writing in the beginning. I wanted to see Michael Douglas in a Western and never got that. What the F, man. He'd be awesome in a Western, I'm just saying. I love me some Douglas.
He would.
Rick, you're number four.
Number four. Well, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yes.
Well, we are in sync. That's my number four. So.
Oh, nice.
Quite literally in number four.
I went on Netflix last night because I had a couple hours to kill, and I was like,
three and a half hours to kill?
Yeah. Okay, listen. No, listen. I got on Netflix, and I was like, let's just see what Westerns are on there. Maybe I can watch something. They're probably not that long. It's Westerns. I clicked on it. I saw, all I saw was it was over 100 minutes, and I was like, oh, it's okay. It's like 2 hours. I'm good. I got into it like an hour into it. I was like, god damn it. I still have like 2/4 of the way. What? I'm not even halfway done yet. There's no way I'm going to finish this. So I didn't finish it in time for the podcast. I saw the beginning. With the kid getting shot.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
But, all right. Yeah. Yeah, if anything, you'd be spoiling it for me.
So let's talk about it. Number four.
Curious though. What did you like about the hour that you saw? Or what did you like about what you saw so far?
It was really okay. I'm not big into Westerns or anything, so I don't really know where they add or where they rank up against each other or anything like that. But it's really interesting how much you can get out of a Western without any
dialogue.
Yeah, dialogue. Yeah. You have no dialogue. It's just like a. That one scene with him in the fly on his face, it lasted for how long? And it was just like so intense with this fly that won't fucking move. And I was like, how do you have a movie like this? But it's still like so entertaining.
Yeah.
It was.
And you're not even into like the
nitty-gritty. I know. I barely got into it at all.
This and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly were always fighting for my favorite Sergio Leone film. And I can never pick just because I love what I love. Well, first of all, we haven't really talked about film, Rick and I. So he doesn't know that I love boring movies. That's my thing. I love slow movies. I wouldn't say that they're boring.
I wouldn't refer to them as boring.
Yeah,
I don't,
you love the stillness.
The general public would call them boring.
Just slowing down and using your brain for less.
Yeah. And the slower, the better. You know, I could have used another hour of Tree of Life.
I'm just saying.
Okay, well.
So this movie is just like up my alley. Like, I like how still it is, how like how you literally take the time to develop story and tell, like, hey, I'm telling this grand story. So yes, I'm going to spend 10 fucking minutes on the fly, you know, and like just how like he trusts actors so much. Like, he, Charles Bronson doesn't really talk that much,
mm-hmm.
doesn't do a lot of talking. Neither does Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's just like, hey, these guys are characters and they know what they're playing, and let's just let them sit there and we're going to film it. And we're not going to wipe their sweat off their face. We're not going to, you know, if you're a little dusty, it's good.
Well, that's when you really start, I think, getting into the real essence of yeah. in this case, the West. Because you got to think, like, there wasn't a whole lot of jibber-jabbering back then.
No.
It was quiet. And what you had was, I mean, nowadays, you know, kids can just pop off all they want. There's no consequences. If you were able to even have the sand to enter into a bar and someone looked at you wrong and you piped up, you got a bullet in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Or they would not waste a bullet and take you outside and beat the shit out of you. And that's just the way mm-hmm. it was. And it was understood. There was a pecking order. And the same thing exists in a corral of horses. You know, I've seen in some of the ranches I've worked, I've seen a few horses get turned loose and say, one of the cowboys say, oh, they're going to fight. And it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
There's no, oh, you can't do that. No, they're going to work it out. And they're yeah. going to establish a pecking order, a law of nature. And in the West, you had that.
Yeah. So. And it was really hard to do drive-bys in the West. Because you're galloping and you're like, ugh.
Right? And yeah. you couldn't turn your pistol sideways because so, nope. it would fire. You know, yeah. it was one
it,
shot.
It would just hit you in the face.
Exactly. Yeah.
So much better days. But I, this movie's just amazing. Jason Robar. Henry Fonda.
What?
Henry yeah, Fonda Henry as Fonda. A villain.
I mean, these are masters, a bunch yeah. of master. I mean, just big icons, I mean, of the mid-20th century that were in this. That just, again, you know, I was hoping that you'd say that about the, because the first words out of your mouth was, well, I don't really like Western. I'm not really a Western person. And that's who I want to hear it from. So what did you get out of it? And you kind of hit it on the head, you know, when you were talking about the space and mm-hmm. just the time. And I think the Coen brothers also in another film they did, the one with Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
No Country for Old
Men. No Country for Old Men. I mean, you just saw these wide spaces where it was terrain and a little dot, which is man.
Yeah.
So the nature was overcoming. And I think, yeah, I think we're in a society where everything's fast, fast, flashy, words, blah, blah, blah. Just follow a guy, walk out of his cabin that just watched his wife get raped by Apaches or something. I don't know. I mean, that is something.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen anymore, but it's something that you could. It did happen. I mean, yeah. these are things you can look and see this part of our life that is integral, that only America has. No other country has the American West, which is why in France and Italy and Switzerland, I mean, they have a Western town built. I mean, it is so huge over there because none of them can claim that. Mm. And it's kind of why, I don't know, it's such a golden part of our history that I just don't see why more people don't try to make them.
Yeah. But yeah, there's so much to talk about this, and I forgot to mention the fact that like Sir Leone kind of started that realism where like people were sweating back then, you know? Mm-hmm. They're in Arizona, they're in Texas, they're in New Mexico, and it's fucking hot. And there's no AC. People are just sweating. Yeah. And he would let that be. You know, you could see people's, like, just oily. Just really oily.
Absolutely.
Sunburned. You see, like in, if you watch, like, Charles Bronson especially, he's really sunburned. And, like, Henry Fonda, because his skin is really fair. And Henry Fonda really sticks out when they reveal his character. And he comes out with that duster.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes, like, to his eyes. And you're like, this guy is a fucking killer.
Yeah.
I don't trust this guy.
Yeah.
Also, my favorite part of this, one of my favorite scenes is when the Gang of Outlaws shoots the family, mm-hmm. the kids, mm-hmm. and that just that tracking shot of like him running to get the kid, and like it just all those tracking shots really amaze me.
Yeah. Awesome, yeah. Awesome shots.
So enough said about that movie, Jenny. You're number four.
I need to finish it, obviously. Yeah.
You need to finish the next
maybe in the
3 hours.
Couple days.
You got to watch it like a TV
an
series.
An hour a day.
Right, but then you got to watch the commentary because it's fascinating.
Oh, man.
I feel like the first time I saw this movie, it was with the commentary on.
What commentary did you see? There's like five commentaries.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
There's
the one with Bertolucci, right? Bertolucci did a commentary.
With a historian.
Okay.
But when I moved to Long Beach, this was one of the DVDs that my roommate had just had, and I feel like for a good month, he was just always watching the commentary from Once Upon a Time in the West. So the various commentaries.
Okay, I'm drawing a blank here. I'm really embarrassed. Who's the? Oh my god, the director of the thing.
Sergio Leone.
The thing.
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter does a commentary on there.
Oh my god, oh, that's right. Yeah. So embarrassed right now.
Wow. I know. John Carpenter. I know this.
So many letters.
I know, you dick. You didn't know
actual
John Carpenter's
physical
name.
Letters, not emails.
Old timey letters.
Yeah.
Yeah. With quills.
It's gonna be like
written quills.
They're gonna just come flying down the chimney like in Harry Potter. They'll find you.
Jenny, what is your number four?
All right, so to go on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, lots of flashy
American
Outlaws stuff. Lots of crazy colors. Lots of talking, lots of singing. I went Oklahoma for my number four.
I was wondering if you were going to put Oklahoma.
Hold on. Oklahoma. What's your number four?
That's my number four.
Did I hear you right?
I did it. I went
there. Wow.
I never seen it.
So now I would like to hear your rendition of Siri with the Fringe on Top.
Ready, go. You.
No, your rendition.
I'm not a singer. No, I'm not the musical theater major. Aren't you?
No.
Oh, really? You just love musicals?
I do just love musicals. Well, I grew up doing musical theater, but I'm not. I would never majored in it because my family probably would have disowned me. That.
There you go.
And I like ladies. So.
Exactly.
Isn't that a perfect place to find ladies? Like, because all the dudes there are.
But like so many
not
people.
Not competing with you.
I've met one straight guy that was musical theater, like legit straight dude, and he said it was a heyday. It was nuts. It was nuts.
The problem is, I feel like every conversation begins with, like, wait, so are you gay? Like, any conversation you have with a girl is like, wait, I don't know. Which way are you? You're a musical theater major. That was my experience.
My boyfriend was definitely a musical theater major.
Wow. Your current boyfriend?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I have some questions for him.
he could sing Siri with a friend.
Oh, yeah. He totally could.
So what is this? I've never seen it. So tell me. Give me the gist of it. What's going on?
It's just like a love story. Things go wrong.
No one dies?
I don't think anyone dies. Oh. I don't remember that well.
Oh, man.
There's a lot of singing and dancing.
Are there whores, at least?
You would hate this movie. Let's just get that out of the way.
All right.
You should never see this.
You're really going to like season two of Dead Men.
There's nothing but whores and people dying.
Like for Ricardo, they should do a musical adaptation of Deadwood.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a musical number called Cocksucker.
Yes.
Jeez.
You might like Annie Get Your Gun.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Did I step on your toes? Is that one of your other...
Ugh, God damn it.
Sorry.
All of my musicals. They're all musicals from here on out.
All right. So is there anything else you want to talk about? Oklahoma? I don't know anything else.
I mean, Shirley Jones.
Who's in it?
I don't know. The guy's name's Gordon McRae.
All right.
I don't know him from anything else.
Okay. He's a musical dude.
He was a hottie back in the day.
All right. What year did this movie come out?
1955.
He can do some serious bell kicks.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Snap.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of like bedazzled like vests in this movie.
No.
All right.
Really?
I'm just checking. All right.
You're thinking of Rhinestone.
Yeah. I guess that's what I'm thinking of. Well,
not
all right.
Bedazzled.
Well, we had to have a musical in this, and
I went there.
You went there.
I told you I hadn't seen very many. Give me a break.
My number
at least
four,
I have five.
My number four is the same as Rick's, Once Upon a Time in the West. So Kevin.
Okay. I'm going to go off the deep end here. My number four is from 1995.
Posse?
And it's Posse. No, it's, it's Dead.
Why is that funny?
It's Dead Man.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, Jim Jarmusch.
Yes.
You're making it. Oh, thank you.
Ooh, the opening town scene when Johnny Depp walks through is brutal.
Yeah.
And awesome.
Yeah. I love that.
I think the entire movie is pretty brutal.
It's really brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, as the violence just starts picking up more and more, it just shocks you every time it happens. I mean, whenever someone gets shot, it's kind of hard to watch, but you're just glued to the screen. And
the fact that they're shot in black and white
kind of
adds a little something that you're like something different and what is it? But you forget that it's black and white. Well, that for me, that's what I experience all the time.
you forget when something's in black and white.
I'm like, why is this so different? Oh, there's no color to
it. Because apparently usually you're tripping when you see something, and so you just start seeing colors on your own.
Yeah.
So that's probably why you don't like musicals. There's too much happening.
Whoa. There it is.
That's it.
You figured it out. This is an amazing movie, though.
It is.
It's got Johnny Depp.
I love this movie. I love Gary Farmer in this movie and his relationship with William Blake's character. I love... Johnny Depp is great, and I love kind of the progression that William Blake takes on his journey and where he ends up in the end, and kind of how he starts off as this guy who, the first time he kills somebody, it takes him, I think, 3 shots before he actually hits on the fourth one, mm-hmm. and then eventually he just becomes this, in a way, a cold-blooded killer. I love the music. I love what Neil Young does with the music, and it kind of just adds that trippy element and kind of goes along with where William Blake is going and kind of... what's going on in his head, and it just adds this really good trippy element, but like rock element that just is great and very poetic at times. And it's Jim Jarmusch, and his scenes aren't filled with tons and tons of dialogue, but it's very sparse, and it just works so well for the characters and this world that he's created.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm a big fan of Westerns, and if I could pick a couple of directors... like just that don't usually do Westerns to do Western. This would be one of the guys.
Yeah.
I think another one would be Spielberg. He hasn't done a Western, and I'm surprised because I think he'd be great at it.
Well, he did do the War Horse.
Yeah.
The War Horse. Yeah.
But
they were British.
Yeah.
They're British. Not American. Definitely not a Western, but I would say.
As closest as to Western.
Yeah, and the use of horses. That's what I focus on is how they use the horses and how dangerous the shots are with the horses. Again, I'll go back to the bucking scene in Lonesome Dove where, you know, Tommy Lee Jones is breaking the filly. That's just some raw, brutal, brutal stuff. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. and my other one would be David Fincher. I don't know why. I think he'd be amazing.
David Fincher Western.
David Fincher Western. That's a...
Oh, wow.
That'd be it'd be really,
really
rapey. Plastic Western.
Barbarella meets Tombstone.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, cool pick. I love it. I wonder who did the cinematography of that. Because it was amazing.
I love this movie. You just helped me. You had it on your list, so I'm not going to put it on my list now. But it was close to being there.
Yeah. Awesome. I like doing that.
The scene where Johnny Depp comes up on the outlaws who've just like killed the family, and Iggy Pop's one of them is wearing a woman's dress.
That whole scene.
Awesome.
And they're like, who are you with? And he says, I'm with nobody, because that's the Indian's name. Yeah. So he's not lying. Oh, it's such a great scene.
It's like who's on first?
Yeah.
It is.
It's great.
Awesome.
And on that scene with Robert Mitchum, when he comes in, he's got like the big bear in the corner. He's like, who are you? What are you doing?
And he's
here?
Holding the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you in my office?
I think this might be on Netflix streaming. You should check that out.
It is. For sure. Yeah.
Cool pick. I'm loving it. Very diverse picks.
This movie,
loving it.
It's like Jim Jarmusch's Vision Quest.
It really is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Adam.
Damn it. I don't know again. Hold on. All right. Okay. Just for the knife fight. 1980s, The Long Riders is on this list just because of the knife fight between David Carradine and James Remar. It's a badass knife fight.
That is a Western I have not seen, but I've been told by several cowboys that it's one of their favorite.
Yeah, it's...
cowboy approved.
I believe a cowboy told me to watch The Long Riders.
Makes sense.
But yeah, there's the knife fight in a bar with James Remar and David Carradine. David Carradine's playing Cole Younger. And they do the whole, like, they take the sash and they each hold one end in their teeth. And they got the big, like, foot-long Bowie knives fighting over a woman. And it's great. It's badass. And the whole like, gimmick of this movie is it's the James Younger gang. And the whole gimmick is it's all these groups of brothers, and it's all brothers playing the brothers. It's the Keeches playing the Jesse and Frank James. It's the Carradines playing the Youngers. It's the Christopher and Nicholas Guest playing, what's his name?
That's right, dude.
The Fords.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Quaids playing the other brothers. So we're in the gang.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a gimmick, but it works. They're all good actors.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Clearly their brotherhood comes.
They
into
needed
play.
The Bacon brothers to be in this movie.
I think they're a little bit young.
Somehow,
yeah, I think they were too young.
Well, because as young, seriously, the guests look really young in this movie. So the Bacon Swayzes? Brothers were probably too young.
The O'Connells,
too young,
way too young,
way too young.
I feel like this you get a bunch.
Jerry
of
O'Connell was still fat when this movie was made.
Well, he could have played one of the kids. But yeah, I like that this is on there, and I never put two and two together. Like, oh, they're wait a minute, they're family.
Yeah,
the actors are related.
All related. Yeah, and Stacy Keach is great.
He's amazing.
David Carradine is great. Randy Quaid kind of outshines Dennis Quaid in this.
Randy Quaid is terrific.
He is terrific. He's a little crazy.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I guess I'm not really a huge Dennis Quaid fan either.
Really.
Yeah.
No, me neither.
Yeah. I really love him in Any Given Sunday.
I do like him in that.
Yeah.
I was agreeing that.
I'm just saying as far as brothers in the cast.
Okay. All right.
But it's great. I do love, I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but I'm going to say it anyway, The Assassination of Jesse James. But
stop
that's
talking,
so much more.
Stop talking about that.
It's much more of a poetic movie, whereas this is the badass cowboy way version of it, was like bar fights and like you're down in the muck.
Awesome. I mean, awesome performances all around. It was one of my honorable mentions, so I'm still okay. But I'm glad you mentioned it. It's gonna get mentioned.
Oh, yeah, I'm
all right,
sure
you know what?
It's coming up.
I'm just gonna stop. But I will say the scene with Mary Louise Parker when she's just bawling. It's that woman is on another plane. She's on the Tom Hardy level. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So that was your number four, right, Adam?
Yes.
So to three.
All right. I think this is going to be somewhat of a favorite all around. Tombstone.
I left it off my list.
I've talked about it before,
else.
So I left it off.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Thank
well,
you.
I would have to say, it's a popular amongst people who even aren't Western fans. Yeah. It's like, oh, Tombstone was great.
I feel like this is the most digestible Western if you're not a Western fan. Like, if you want to get your feet wet, your toes wet, watch Tombstone.
I can attest to that. Yes.
Absolutely. Oh, well, there you go.
This is what you've seen. Is this on your list?
No, it was on my outlaw list.
Okay. That's why.
But yeah,
sealed.
I love this one. Yeah.
I'd have to say for a few reasons. Now, I will say that they do the Hollywood thing by portraying the Earp brothers as being the justice, lawmen, and upright. Yeah. But the real Earp brothers, and I found this out by hanging around Tombstone, the actual town, is that they were corrupt. They used, like a lot of lawmen of that time, they used it for their gain and power and for muscle.
Hold on a second. A corrupt lawman. I don't know if I buy that.
Because we have none, especially today in L.A.
No.
At all.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Villaraigosa is very a stand-up guy. So then you're a Tombstone guy and not a wider guy.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Okay,
if it's between those two, yeah, absolutely Tombstone. And I'll just say again that opening or the opening scene of Tombstone where you know, that whole thing with the intro of Johnny Ringo, how they take the woman off. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I just was like my stomach was twisted watching that woman getting drug off. And what hits me, I guess the deepest is that really happened.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't fiction.
No.
This happened, and it happened to a lot of women during that time. It happened to Native women from a gang of bad cowboys. It happened just – there were eight cowboys that haven't had sex in a while, and, you shouldn't have been washing your, you know, deer skins here by the river. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is about that, but that's the epitome of what I like to write is those situations. Not so much rape, but just injustice being done.
Yeah.
And the resurrection of justice in a way. I'll shut up about Tombstone. What do you guys got?
No. Well, we're talking about Tombstone.
I think everybody here loves
Tombstone.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is just like the caliber of actors that they got. And I feel like this was like a play. Well, reading the production notes and like the commentaries and stuff, it was very much like a play because the director that they lost, then like Kurt Russell kind of kept them together. And I mean, Kurt Russell is like he directed most of this movie, but he doesn't get credit for it. But, he kind of kept everybody together, and it feels like a group of like actors putting up a play. It just feels like everybody's like top of their game. Like Michael Biehn is amazing.
Awesome.
Yes.
Ringo.
I'll tell you what, Billy Bob Thornton, very overweight Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, yeah.
Something on your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just sitting in my seat. Oh, my God.
There's so many. Jason Priestley's amazing in this. Everybody, Billy Zane.
Hold on.
Billy.
I don't know about all that.
Hey, he played a good coward, okay?
Jason Priestley?
Yeah.
He doesn't really play a coward. He plays a guy who gets upset. He talks down Wyatt Earp. I don't think a coward would do that. He's I don't know. I feel like he was kind of tacked in there. It's like, let's put Jason Priestley in here and make people think it's like Young Guns.
I guess so. They wanted the young crowd, the young ladies. But
I was talking with Kevin about this other movie on the way here. This is not going to be on my list, but it's another Western that Jason Priestley is also in.
Don't say Calendar Girls.
No. It's a Western. The Last Rites of Ransom Pride. Oh. And he plays a weird, creepy, dirty, like, mountain man character really effectively.
Really?
And, like, I forgot that it was him. Like, oh, shit, who the fuck? Oh, that's Jason Priestley. So it's not like I have anything against Jason Priestley.
What's the movie called again?
The Last Rites of Ransom Pride. It's Lizzie Kaplan.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah, I love her.
Yeah, Lizzie Kaplan's in it. She's the main character. She's great. She's trying to bury her, like, beau. And Christopher Sauberson's in it. It's pronounced Bo.
Her Bo.
But not on my list. Jason Priestley's in it, and he's much better than he is in Tombstone. Okay.
But all of the cast in this movie is amazing. Like, just like Howard
Billy
Booth,
Zane,
Billy
I do
Zane.
Agree with.
Thomas
Hayden
Church.
Thomas Hayden Church is badass in this movie.
Oh, he's awesome. Oh, and go ahead.
I'm blanking on his name.
His name is Stephen Lang.
There you go.
And he has been. I've seen him on Broadway. The guy's phenomenal. Yeah. And of course, is the Colonel in Avatar.
Yeah,
he's unreal.
He plays an FBI agent in Public Enemies.
He has
that final scene where he whispers. He tells Johnny Depp's John Dillinger's girlfriend, like the message that he gave him. And, like, just that scene, it's so quiet and so, like, simple, but he's amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Is he also in that new show?
He was in that Fox show where there was dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah, what was it?
It got canceled.
It was really bad, but he was in it, though.
He was in it.
Yeah.
He's good in everything. He's good in it.
You want to hear something really embarrassing and kind of lame?
Well, of course we do.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, I was going to go anyway, but I was just waiting for a nod or something. When Stephen Lang, I saw him in a one-man show he did. It was in New York at the time when I was training. I was a student up there at Stella Adler. And he did 60, I can't remember, it's like 60-something characters, and he was completely effective in every single one. One-man show for like an hour and a half, just completely engaged. And afterwards, I was like, this guy's amazing. So I go home and I get on IMDb Pro and I look up, like, see his agent info, and he has a private email. I'm sure it's not there now, but this was many years ago. So I email him. I'm like, Mr. Lang, you're so amazing. If you ever need someone to bounce off, rehearse, or help you with anything, please call me. Here's my number. Or you want to work together. I want to work with you, blah, 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 blah. So I gave it a shot. And no response.
It may
still be in his spam box.
Maybe.
I never checked my spam box.
From 7 years ago, yeah. Maybe.
He's like, wait a minute.
If he starts now by Christmas time, maybe.
Yeah. What if you just randomly got a call like, hey, I'm working Avatar, you know, they resurrected my character from Avatar. I needed somebody to rehearse with me. And it's like, how did you get my email? Well, I searched my spam folder, and turns out you offer this to me. Or what if he's saving it, and then when like, you know, you get famous, then he's like, okay, now I'm going to rehearse with this guy.
Yeah, he's like, okay, let's do it now. Too late. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'd still do it.
It's good. Good pick, Tombstone. I'm digging it. We could talk, and we could go an hour on Tombstone.
I feel like Tombstone is one of those movies that just like brings fathers and sons together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was 10. Yeah. Well, you would know, Jenny. You're better than all of us. Better than all of us. I remember my dad taking me to see this when I was 10, and it was just like badass.
I remember my dad, at the time, we were still recording stuff on VHS tapes, you know? It's awesome. And you do it with movies you rent. You're like, oh, I love this movie. I'm going to copy it.
Double them up. Yeah. Stack them up.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, we actually bought this one. That's how momentous of a movie this was.
But wait, this movie, I was really upset with my dad because this movie was really long. It was longer than 2 hours. And he set the setting at standard play.
Oh.
So when I went to rewatch it, I'm like, what the fuck's going on? And I'm like, Dad, what happened to the end of this movie? And he's like, I don't know. Put it in standard play. And I was so upset with my dad for like a week. I was like, how could you not check the time, running time? What's going on?
The running time. Yeah. Remember when that was a thing? Yeah.
Oh, first world problems.
So, Jenny, you're number three.
All right. I went with
American Outlaw. Come on, fucking say it. We've been waiting the whole time.
No.
I just feel so out of the league here. My number three is Back to the Future Part 3.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Alrighty.
That's an amazing Western.
I had to do it.
What kind of moccasins are them? Nikkei. What kind of engine talk?
Clint Eastwood, what kind of name is that?
This movie has like every cliche, but amazingly funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mad Dog Tannen. That's
right. Mad Dog.
Great great grandfather.
Yeah.
This movie is great. This is really out of the box thinking. I'm really excited that you brought this movie.
I love this one. I love all of the Back to the Futures. It's just which one do I like more?
Yeah.
But they all still hold up. I like them all. Yeah. This one might have been the first Western I'd ever seen, probably. If you can classify it as like a Western.
I classify it as a Western.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would.
People died.
Yeah, I love it.
There was a whore.
It's just an H.G. Wells type Western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. Okay.
And I love all the like historical things they like weave into it, like the frisbee thing.
Yeah.
And, like, it's really cool.
Yeah.
If you haven't
and
seen
what's her face?
Mary Steenburgen.
Yes, I love her. She's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see, if you just saw her, you wouldn't think she's a funny lady. You'd be like, oh, she must be like, you know, Steel Magnolias or something.
She's not actually
I know, but wouldn't you think like she would be in that kind of movie? She's hilarious.
Now I'm upset that she's not in Steel Magnolias. Because she's an actress and she's Southern and she's good. She should have been in Steel Magnolias.
That's true. Yeah.
Why Maybe wasn't Mary Steenburgen in Steel Magnolias?
She's not serious enough for Steel Magnolias.
I love her in that movie Clifford with Martin Short.
Oh, my God.
That's my guilty pleasure, guys. Come on. Clifford. It's got two amazing actors. It's not only got Mary Steenburgen, but it's got...
Martin Short.
No.
Charles Grodin.
He's amazing. And
you don't think Martin Short's an amazing actor?
Well, no. Yes, yeah, he is. Yeah.
Oh, I don't understand how you could like Clifford and not think Martin Short is
No,
good.
He is amazing. He is amazing. All right. So my number three, it is from 1992. And okay, like I said, all these are my number ones. I'm sure this one's in one of your lists, Unforgiven.
Yep, that's my number three.
Okay. Well,
one of my honorable mentions.
I'm just going to rearrange my list so we can talk about more movies.
Okay, excellent.
But yeah, I love it a thousand times over.
This movie, it's part of the trilogy. I feel like this is the fourth movie in the Sergio Leone Man Without a Name trilogy. I feel like this is what happened to that character. Mm-hmm. Like he went off and got married and kind of, she cleaned him up and it's a tale of like not only redemption, but like, hey, I got to do the right thing now. Like, hey, I was an asshole and an assassin.
And also, you know, like, I can be resurrected.
Yeah.
I will come back and burn all you sons of bitches.
Yeah. 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 And I also like, I know, like reading again, all the commentaries and stuff like that, Gene Hackman did not want to play this part. He didn't want to play a villain.
Are you serious?
Yeah. He was going through this thing and I think he went through it the last couple years of his career where he didn't want to play bad guys. I think it was something to do with like his grandkids and he just didn't want to play a villain period. And, Clint Eastwood had to fly out and go to his home and go, you're playing the good guy. I'm the bad guy. It's just the circumstances.
It's the ambivalence. Yes. Yeah. Which is key to the story.
Yeah.
And I do have to say, I kind of disagree with it being the fourth in the trilogy because the way they describe William Money seems much darker than The Man with No Name ever. I feel like it's more in line with the character from High Plains Drifter than it is.
Okay.
No, you're right. You're right. He does rape a girl in that.
Yeah. He comes into town, rapes a chick, kills three dudes.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, this one, and, like, unprovoked kill screen dudes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whereas in...
And the raping was unprovoked.
Well, definitely unprovoked. But in the Man with No Name trilogy, he's more of an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Less of a villain. Like, he's not...
I guess, yeah. But, I mean, he's still kind of, like, he's killing people. Either way...
This is the closest in tone to those movies, I feel like.
And it's just, like, everybody getting top-notch acting, like... Richard Harris.
Richard Harris, so good.
Talking about the Queen again?
Yes.
Right. On so. Independence Day! Yeah. Yeah. I guess, on a side note of Richard Harris, I just saw, I was someone suggested to me to watch the movie Richard Harris and the one where he takes over the Indian tribe.
Oh, it's
70s.
Yes.
It was awesome.
I'm picturing
a man named Horse?
A man named Horse.
Yeah. I'm picturing the VHS cover. And I know exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
Which
he did a bang-up job
in
that.
Yeah. And just the speech he's giving when he's shooting off the train cart. And he's like, and why not shoot a president? And it's like, dude, this guy is so creepy.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman's amazing when he's like, Duck of Death.
I do understand his aversion to playing this character. Because I was terrified of him.
Oh,
I was terrified of him.
Yeah.
And as a child, like even though he is technically the good guy, as a child, he does the most messed up things in your mind. Because like Clint Eastwood coming from like, oh, Clint Eastwood's the good guy, so whoever is beating him up is the bad guy.
Yeah.
So I understand his aversion to playing the character, but he's excellent.
Yeah.
And just I can't say enough good things about everyone in this movie.
Morgan Freeman like is great. All the women who play the whores are amazing.
I just got to come to the defense of Gene Hackman because, you know, looking at it, I mean, he was just a lawman trying to keep order in his town. It was a no-gun rule, and that was it. And he's like, I'll take that 45, Bob. He knows. He's good at his job, and he was just a lawman trying to run a tight ship.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. That's the thing. It's like when you're a kid, you don't understand that. You're just like, he's beating up Clint Eastwood, so he's the bad guy.
But right.
When you're an adult, you're like, wait, no, he's... You see the ambivalence and the ambiguousness of the of the story, and they're both great. And I love it more as time goes by.
Yeah.
Which is weird to say because I loved it the first time I saw it anyway.
I like the...
It's a fermented love. It just keeps growing.
Yeah, it gets better with age.
The Schofield kid. He's like, maybe your sight's bent. He's like, it ain't bent.
Oh, I love that. You see that hawk up there?
Yeah.
Ain't no damn hawk, kid.
I could shoot this son of a bitch right here, Ned.
And Sal Rubinek is in. He's awesome in this again.
Francis Farmer?
Yeah.
Francis Farmer, yeah.
So many fucking.
Francis Fisher, I'm sorry. Francis Farmer's dead.
Yes. Wasn't he married
to Francis Fisher a farmer?
She could have been.
Wasn't he married
to
Francis
Fisher? In the movie.
I think he was married to her. Cleanswood was.
Yes, I think he was, actually.
He was. But yeah, and we can go again another hour on this movie, but we won't. So
I mean, we didn't even talk about the look of the movie.
Oh yeah,
I mean, he shot it in scope to squeeze as much as he could onto the actual celluloid.
And I mean, just like hearing the stories about how like he had the script for like 10 years and like just perfecting it, just this is an amazing film. And I hope he said that he doesn't want to do another Western. This was his last, but
God, I hope not.
I know. I want to see one last Western with Clint Eastwood.
I will write the part of Virgil Calhoun in Dead Men. That was molded for Sam Elliott, just so you know. But obviously you look at Brent Rock and you see, oh shit, Sam Elliott has a younger brother in Tombstone, Arizona.
But that is my number three, Kevin.
That was my number three.
That was your number three. Adam?
Damn it, Kevin.
Young Guns 2?
How did you know? All right. So I'm just going to throw this one in here because I feel like it's probably not going to get mentioned if I don't. From 1994, Maverick.
Oh.
I don't know what to tell you. Hey. I love Maverick.
Okay, I can go on about Alfred Molina.
Yeah.
Bang-up job. Had no idea he was British until I met him in New York and he taught us. And he spoke with a British accent. I'm like,
you're
the mean guy from Maverick with an American accent. Hold on.
Or the bad guy from the beginning of Raiders.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good call. Or the guy from Not Without My Daughter, where he played a Middle Eastern dude.
Okay.
Not Without My Daughter. Oh, my
Russian,
God. That's a flashback.
A Russian in The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Yeah.
I just saw this weekend at IMAX. I didn't even realize he was in Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
That's right.
Did you say that? IMAX?
Did you just say that and I missed it?
I think he said that.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Thank
you. You saw it on IMAX?
Oh, yeah. I saw it this weekend.
What did you think of it?
I don't know. Does it look any better? I'd never seen it on the big screen in general.
Okay.
So that was awesome. I don't know that you really need to see it in IMAX. Right. I guess it's
in theaters again.
I've never been to the AMC Burbank IMAX theater, and it's just not a very good IMAX theater.
No, it's not. It's faux IMAX,
not even real IMAX.
Yeah. It would have been better at a different IMAX, probably.
Yeah.
But the movie on the big screen, of course, How is the
digital transfer of it? Like, how did it look?
There were a couple fuzzies and such, but it looked pretty good.
Because I was thinking about paying the $25 to watch at least the first three movies. They're doing that on Saturday at the AMC Burbank.
They're doing all three?
Well, they're doing all four, but I'm not going to stay for Crystal.
That four doesn't exist to us.
Yeah.
all right. Well, where were we?
Sorry.
No. That's kind of Western. Western theme-ish.
I think you're stretching that.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Don't give me that. The Last Crusade.
I don't know. I still think you're closer to getting a Western with Michael Douglas in like The Ghost in the Darkness than you are getting Indiana Jones as a Western.
That was a good pull. I like that.
Indiana Jones' adventure.
Excellent. All right.
So Maverick.
Oh, I forgot. You were talking about Maverick.
Yeah, I mentioned Maverick. That happened.
Richard Donner.
You know, because there's a moment with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Yeah.
And randomly Corey Feldman. Yeah, he's one of the people robbing the bank.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, he's robbing the bank with Danny Glover. It's just fun. I don't care what you think about Mel Gibson. Just put your blinders on. Just enjoy a fun, silly Western movie.
Jodie Foster. I had a huge crush on Jodie Foster because of this movie. Okay. Huge crush on her.
And you're like, I have some bad news for
you. you try all you want. Kevin, are you sure that didn't start when she was playing, when she was 12 years old in Taxi?
Oh, I was going to say Candle Shoe.
Unfortunately, I did not see that when I was younger. It took me a little while to see.
Hey, I'm not going to lie. I totally had a crush on Jodie Foster from Candle Shoe. Does anybody else even remember that movie?
No.
It was a Disney live action movie.
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about.
Thank you. Jenny's looking at me like I'm crazy.
You are. Yeah.
I mean, I am crazy, but it's a real movie. Yeah. Google it.
It was a dream you had.
Candle Shoe.
But no, it's a fun movie. Maverick is fun.
It's fun. Graham Greene is great when him and Mel Gibson joking around about making Indian jokes and talking about using the bow and arrow and like hurting his hand. Alfred Molina, as you said, he's creepy in this movie. I love how it starts off with him noosed to a tree in the middle of the desert with a bag full of rattler snakes at his feet. I mean, it's fun. I never saw the show, but I love James Garner in the movie.
I love James Garner in everything. I like him in Space Cowboys.
He's great.
Space Cowboys.
He's amazing. There's nothing that I've seen of James Garner that I'm like, it was okay. He's always amazing. It's like him and Robert Duvall. Like
because they both come from that old school thread of just hard work and doing your due diligence, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, he's got the benefit of the Rockford Files.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I do like the Rockford Files. Mm-hmm. I'm not joking. Why are you laughing?
The benefit.
It's a great show.
It was a good start.
It comes from that school of thought. Of just
the Rockford Files.
The file thought.
That's right.
All right, Rick, what's your number two?
Okay, number two is The Three Amigos.
Oh, my God. Awesome. Finally.
I'm just kidding. I was just saying, but let's go with it anyway, and then I'll give you my real number two.
We're all disappointed now.
No, we'll go with your number two, and then we're going to talk about Three Amigos. you guys riled up, dude.
I know, I totally did. Okay, number two would be The Searchers.
I've never heard of that. What's The Searchers? Who's in that?
Yeah, wait. I don't think we mentioned it four times tonight.
That's a Western?
kind Searchers? Of. It's okay. Right next to the Long Riders with the Cowboys. The Searchers and the Long Riders are the two that they mention. So, yeah. John Ford, classic. I mean, phenomenal. Just unbelievable. From the get-go. The epitome of just revenge. Yeah. You know, and that scene with John Wayne where he's just
I love when he was talking to Harry Carey Jr. and he's like, he just pulls him because he brings him down a peg. And that is something you do in the cowboy ranks. Like, that's a world that nobody gets to see. But when you're in a band of like four or five cowboys and you're out and about doing your thing, one gets too cocky. It's that pecking order like horses. It's you bring them down. And he said, look, don't go, you know, don't go after him. I mean, told him basically like, that's it. You're done. And then he gets pissed off and runs out and gets shot just like that. I mean, it was done. Life, death, just right in a flash like that. I mean, just a great, and just great writing, great. The guy who plays that, he plays in all of the John Ford's movies. He was the preacher. His name escapes me. He played an Irish sergeant major in Fort Apache. Did a bang up job in it, but yeah, just again, just great raw Monument Valley, John Ford, open style westerns. Galloping, just the whole deal. And Scar, you know, that whole guy. I mean, I don't think he was actually native. I think he was some white dude. But, you know, it was just his whole thing of, like, the trading, the women, the whole tribal aspect. And John Wayne, who is just as evil, his character, just as evil as Scar is. I mean, it's evil and evil. And they both meet in that teepee scene. And it's just like, they understand each other very clearly, like from one evil to the other evil, and it was awesome. And the lead guy was a bad guy, you know, because John Wayne was not a nice man in that.
Yeah. You know what? There's like two John Wayne Westerns that I love. Besides that, like the person who introduced me to Westerns was my grandfather, and he was always – it was always – you're either a John Wayne fan or you're a Clint Eastwood fan. You can't be both. And he was always like, John Wayne would never do what Clint Eastwood does. Clint Eastwood would shoot somebody in the back.
Yeah.
If it's going to, you know, if he's going to win the fight, it's going to shoot somebody in the back.
Or come into town and rape a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And
they do different kinds of bad dudes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the Searcher's bad, and then there's High Plains Drifter bad.
The two movies that stand out for me from John Wayne is The Searchers and True Grit. But besides that, like, I just can't, I need that dirty West, and I'm not getting it from John Wayne, I feel. But Searcher is definitely one of the ones that I like of his, and yeah.
No Stagecoach?
Yeah, I could do without it. I'm not going to lie to you.
That was his break, and what's interesting about John Wayne is John Wayne grew up in Glendale, and he actually did not grow up on a cowboy farm, did not do the cowboy thing. He learned from cowboy stuntmen. That's where he learned how to ride, and from there he just ended up adopting all the principles that they do, and basically becoming a Western star through listening to these cowboy stuntmen.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, good pick. I'm glad you put it on. But now let's talk about fucking Three Amigos.
Three Amigos.
Your pseudo number two.
Right.
I love Three Amigos. Let's talk about it because it was in my honorable mention. Let's talk about it during honorable mention.
Okay.
Right, let's just we'll wait for it.
We're going to table that.
We can go really long on that.
It's a sweater. We'll come back.
You're number two, Jenny.
All right. So my number two, I'm sure we've named this one before, but I love this movie. Desperado.
Ooh.
I want Desperado.
The Robert Rodriguez film?
Mm-hmm.
That's out of left field. It is in a sense a western.
Totally.
I mean, if nothing else, the entire trailer is predicated upon the western stereotype of the bar, the saloon scene, with the doors and everything.
Guy walks into
the
bar.
I didn't think of it.
Yep.
That's cool.
This is really good. You're bringing some stuff that we're not thinking about. You got Back to the Future 3, and you got Desperado. I love me Desperado.
Oklahoma,
I forgot about that.
Don't forget about that one. exclamation point.
I love me some Desperado. We got to see Salma Hayek's boobies.
Bam.
Yes.
Always excited about that. And people getting shot left and right.
Yeah.
And again, this movie, like, it was what I like about Westerns. It was like a little dirty. Like, some parts were hokey. It's a lot dirty. Steve Buscemi, in the beginning, has an amazing effing star.
Yeah. That's great.
And the way he tells the story, and it's just, this movie's really great, and the commentary is amazing. If you're a filmmaker, listen to the commentary. They talk about how they met. Like, Steve Buscemi was doing the festival circuit for Reservoir Dogs, and Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino were already friends. And he's like, fuck, I love this guy in Reservoir Dogs. I got to put him in something. And he's like, well, I got it. He's going to tell a story in the beginning of my movie. And,
awesome.
This movie's so good. It's what I loved El Mariachi and what it did, but this one was like, well, this is what happens when you have money.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you tell the same story. And it was amazing. I like the villain. It introduced America, well, the world to Danny Trejo, who's an amazing character actor.
Yeah.
And yeah.
This one and the one after it I like too.
Really?
I do. I like it.
I
like all the people that are in it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's filled with a lot of people.
See, I love...
I picked this one over the other one, but I like the other one too.
I love... There's certain things like... Well, Cheech Marin's funny in both of them.
Yeah.
But what I like about the third one is Johnny Depp. I think he steals the movie.
He's great in that movie. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. But
the movie itself.
Yeah.
Why can't I think of the name of it?
Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
That's it.
Yeah.
I was getting confused.
Much shorter than Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah. By like an hour and a half.
Much less... Visually
stunning. Yeah. This was the first movie.
A lot more dialogue.
Once Upon a Time in the West. No, I'm sorry. Once Upon a Time in Mexico was the first movie to be shot digitally. Featured.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's why it looks kind of hokey.
And you can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But good pick. I'm digging it.
I'm curious. What camera did they shoot on?
It was one of the very early digital cameras.
Something shitty.
Yeah. It was like a prototype that he shot on. And no one ever shot with that camera ever again because it was so
they
horrible.
They learned their lesson.
Yeah.
I got to say, I love Rodriguez, though. He's such a badass and rebel. And he just has this, I don't know if you guys have seen that 10-minute filmmaking school he has.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just, I love that he's just like, you want to make a movie? Go make one. I'm going to show you how I did it. You see this? See how the bus hits him right here? Drop in this way. And it was just like, awesome. Because he shares it and says, look, here, do it.
Well, this is my thing with Rodriguez. I love, like, that's a good way to break in. But now we have money. You don't have to be cheap, dude. Like, hire a fucking guy to do cinematography.
Yeah.
Like, why do you have to do everything?
Hire an editor.
Yeah. Like, that's my only complaint about him now. But I love Rodriguez. Old Rodriguez, I love old Rodriguez. It just bugs me that he gives somebody a job. The economy's hurting, dude.
Right.
Throw somebody a bone. Right. Yeah. But no, I do love me some Rodriguez. And good pick.
Me too.
Damn you. All right. Where are we at? Two? My number two, no surprise, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
That's my number one.
Okay, let's talk about
it. I'm glad I didn't put it on the list because I knew somebody would have it.
This and Once Upon a Time in the West are always fighting for my favorite Western.
Once Upon a Time in the West is my number two favorite movie of all time. So,
well, these were always fighting for my number one until my number one came along. And then said, excuse me.
I'm just confused now.
Okay.
Where are we?
Well, number two.
What are we talking about again?
All these are my number ones, but my number two is Once Upon a Time.
Now it just sounds dirty.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Let's talk about it. Amazing.
It is. My love for this movie started out before I actually saw it, and I didn't see this film until college.
I don't even understand how that happens.
Well, you wait.
Well, it didn't start out till college when I actually started actually appreciating film. And I took a film like study class, and in the book there was this like whole chapter where it was just laying out the final scene, the final shootout, and laying out each shot and just talking about it. And as I'm just looking at the pictures, I'm like, these seem really interesting. I want to know what this is about. And I just kind of became obsessed and then watched the movie and just obsession went.
So how old were you the first time you saw this movie?
20.
What?
Yeah.
This was on TBS like all the time.
Never seen it.
And TNT.
Really?
Really?
I like how you raise your hands like
I'm holding you up.
Like a fucking casino dealer. He's like, she's like, no chips in my pocket. So I this movie's, again, like Once Upon a Time in the West, really slow, lets it build up. I love all the characters in it.
I saw this one way before I saw Once. Like, again, I was very unaware of Once Upon a Time in the West until I was 20.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'd heard of it, but I didn't see it until Nate was watching it all the time and with the commentary on, which was still fascinating.
Yeah.
But Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was always on TV. Like, this was just, like, a movie. Movies for guys who like movies. Remember that back in the day? This was always on that. Mm-hmm. AMC always played it.
And this has, like, I feel like everyone's working at the top of their game. Like, the cinematography is amazing. The score is, I think after that movie... Every single Western or Western-themed movie has tried to copy this score.
Mm-hmm. Was it Ennio Morricone?
Yeah.
For this?
And I think with the, like, I've read tons and tons of books on Sergio Leone. I think for this, he said, I want something like I've never heard before. Like, not something Westernish. Something that we have. I have.
And then he accidentally redefined Western music.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. And he's like, "Well, I'll This is what I'll give you. This masterpiece of a score."
And then what? An hour before the actual movie starts, like, and before the main plot kicks in.
Oh yeah.
Like, we just like the back and forth between Tuco and Blondie.
Oh yeah.
And then, oh hey, by the way, there's actually, we're gonna get somewhere with this. Yeah. It's not just two of them fighting.
And also, but that was that thing that's so cool about that movie is that they kind of showed you the prequel without you. You know, like nowadays they'd be like, "Oh, cut out the first 100 pages, dude. Just get to the point."
When the prequel to the prequel,
yeah,
this is the prequel.
Yeah, this is a prequel to the prequel.
Yeah,
and they put it in the movie, and they're like, "This is these two characters."
Because it's so interesting and so fun, and Eli Wallach and Clint Eastwood are great together.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and everybody's so good in this, and Lee Van Cleef is amazing. He's just such a good character face. Just like he looks like a badass. I don't want to mess with that dude.
As far as I'm concerned, he is a badass.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For all time.
What else is there to say about this movie?
I mean, the one thing that I love about Leone is how he realizes how expressive the human face is.
Yeah.
The whole introduction of Lee Van Cleef's character and when he goes and has the job to kill that guy and his family, basically, in the beginning. The whole introduction is them just looking at each other, and nothing is said, but they both know what's going on and why Lee Van Cleef is there.
Yeah. Well, just the fact that, like, the end, the shootout, it takes, like, half an hour of the movie, the shootout. Like, it's like close-up, 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 close-up on the gun, close-up on the gun, close-up on the gun, medium, 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 medium. You know, dirty shot of the gun. It's like so many. It's the coverage must have been, that must have taken like at least like 2 weeks.
Easily. I mean, because he's got he starts it off with the wide shots and then he just moves closer and closer and closer. And
And what I like about Leone is the eyes. Yes. Like when you're watching in the big, I've had the chance to watch in the big screen. It's like Charles Bronson's eyes in Once Upon a Time in the West are the whole fucking screen. Mm-hmm. Like literally the whole screen. And it's pretty amazing. And all right. That was your number one?
That was my number one.
All right. What's your number two then?
So my number two is 1959, and this will contradict you. You got to be either an Eastwood or a Wang guy, and it's Rio Bravo.
Mm.
I love this movie, and I think the main reason I love it is I love the storyline that goes on with the dude who's played by Dean Martin, and his storyline is basically he worked with John Wayne, who's a sheriff in the town, met a girl on a train who came in town off a train and then ran away with her and came back a drunk. And he used to be like this great gunfighter. And now when the movie starts out, he is basically begging for alcohol. And a guy throws, a gold piece into a spittoon to have him go fish it out. If you want a drink, you're going to go in the spittoon and fish it out. And then you can have a drink.
Wow.
And throughout the movie, he's becoming dry and he's not having alcohol and he's got the shakes and they really, really definitely embrace the sweat and he just looks awful, but he's trying to stand strong with John Wayne, who's got this prisoner and people are trying to break him out of the prison and he's trying to help him out and be a friend, but he's not drinking. So he's going through withdrawal. And I just really love, Dean Martin is amazing.
Yeah.
In the role, and I just love how that's going on. Meanwhile, it's gritty, and John Wayne has a job, and he's trying to keep this criminal from being broken out and getting set free for killing a guy for no reason.
Yeah,
and
it's Ricky Nelson, right?
Ricky Nelson is in it as well. Yes, and he does a really good job. John Wayne, of course, is amazing. And I always, every time I watch this, I get a little crush on Angie Dickinson. Because she has this great smile and she's really sweet.
Because she's Angie Dickinson?
And she's Angie Dickinson. And I like her banter with John Wayne. And I kind of like how he keeps telling her to do one thing. She's like, no, I want to be here with you and I'm going to stay. And I just love that aspect of her character.
Very cool. Very good number pick, too.
And it's Howard Hawks and he does a fantastic job.
Yeah. Good pick. Very different.
Yeah.
What are you going to bring to the party?
We're going to go a little bit newer. 1990, Dances with Wolves.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Snap.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is one of those movies. Okay, so 1990, I was seven or eight when this came out. And I remember I would just watch this. I'd be like, I'm going to watch Dances with Wolves now, Mom. And just put it on. Just watch it all the way through. Which, and it's like a 3-hour, it's another 3-hour long Western. Westerns are, they like to be long.
I had no idea.
Well, you know, it's something about just those expansive shots of the West.
Yeah.
It lends to a little bit
yeah.
of the running
time. And if you look at the time, things took time back then. We didn't have cars. We weren't getting from A to B in 5 minutes. It was taking us 2 days.
I remember playing Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. It's funny that you mentioned that because that's you hit on something that I was wanted to talk about earlier. That it took time to get to places. It took time to do things. Like you didn't have a microwave. You had to cook. You had to really cook your food. Like
start
you
start a fire. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I like the slowness of films like that because you're like, oh, we're getting to see what people had to do.
Part of the story is the journey. The journey is a big part of Westerns.
Yeah.
And especially in this one, I mean, after the great opening on the battlefield and he's trying to kill himself and he ends up saving the day and gets whatever post he wants. But then getting reassigned and then the journey with him and Robert Pastorelli to his new assignment is just great. Their interaction, just the two of them on the open plane and the narration as he's journaling about it. It's great.
He, this guy knows how to make a Western.
Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy.
Well, I mean, I didn't even know all of his real horse experience and whatnot. And my mom loves Kevin Costner. I don't know a lot about him though, other than my mom loves him.
Yeah. this is a really awesome movie.
Epic.
Yeah. I think the idea of a white man kind of not infiltrating, but he starts with seeing the wolf, and that's kind of like his spirituality in a sense, you know, and he starts to see the natives, and the natives start to see him, and it's this whole kind of like seeing spirit in this guy and inviting that spirit back to their tribe. And that's, I think, I mean, for me, that's what was so amazing to watch, like you did. I would watch it all the way through to see those experiences, even when he's telling that guy, like, you're wearing my hat.
Yes.
And to the tribe, he's like, we share. So this is our hat. It's my hat now.
And he left it on the plane, so he didn't want it anymore.
Right. And he's like, no, I want it back. And like, no, that's not how it works in our tribe. So it was just this culture clash in a way, in a beautiful way. And I mean, that's a little bit, just a little touch of what season two will bring in Dead Men.
Nice.
Sweet.
So we go into that.
This is one of those movies that made me look forward to long trips because you'd be like, all right, well, I can just hang in the, we had a portable like TV VCR setup. So I could just hang in the back and watch Dances with Wolves if we drove somewhere.
Well, some of us weren't fortunate like you were.
Yeah. I had a Citation.
Oh no, it wasn't out of fortune. It was out of, my dad drove a limo. So we could just take it and be like, oh, we'll just watch this.
That's awesome though.
But it was business related. It wasn't like we were rich or anything.
Still though. I mean, someone sees you pulling up in a limo. They're not going to say, well, this guy's dad drives a limo. They're going to be like, this dude, this kid's riding in a limo.
When they saw
his own.
Get out of the car, it's like, hmm. And then also there's a lot, there's baggage that comes along with arriving anywhere in a limo.
Yeah.
I'd be like, But I mean, when your dad's driving a limo wearing like jeans and a t-shirt and a San Diego Padres baseball cap, it's not really like, oh, he's my driver.
You're like, what's Casual Friday? Right. Well, good pick, guys. I'm liking these picks. Damn you guys. I love it. I feel like I have to watch all these movies again. Rick, give us your recap and then your number one.
My recap, the number one? Okay. I'm excited to mention a few honorable mentions too, but we can come back around to that.
Oh, we're going
to
come back around to that.
Okay. So again, my number five was Fort Apache, John Ford. My number four was Once Upon a Time in the West. My number three was Tombstone. My number two was The Searchers, again, John Ford, John Wayne. And my number one would have to be the 1989 miniseries Lonesome Dove.
I didn't see that coming.
Well, I'm going to tell you, it's easy to switch some of those around, but the reason Lonesome Dove, I guess, affected me so much was, A, I watched it all the time, and B, I think it's just the music was a major part of Lonesome Dove. The relationship between Woodrow Call and Augustus McRae Robert Duvall and Tommy Lee Jones was phenomenal. I know for a fact that Robert Duvall had went to go kind of live with a cowboy in Texas and studied the whole movements that he does. Oh, Woodrow, the whole all this and his movements are modeled not only like a bunch of older cowboys that do that, but one specifically that I don't know the guy's name, but a cowboy buddy of mine who's a Lonesome Dove fanatic and cowboy in Austin had told me about this story where Robert Duvall had gone and stayed with this guy for 3 months, learned this guy poured all the knowledge into him. So everything that Augustus McCrae brought for that Robert Duvall played in that character was a exact kind of mimicry, or not mimicry, what do you want to call it? Just stealing that personality. And Augustus McCrae made such an impact. Robert Duvall made such an impact on the cowboy community that they have the Gus hat now with the pinch, and that is actually sold in Western stores, the Gus hat. It's called the Gus hat. So, I mean, that's a pretty deep impact on the community. And any cowboy you can talk to across the world, or across at least America, and you mentioned Lonesome Dove, they're gonna give the cowboy nod of approval, which is kind of that's all I care about, is if the cowboys think that's the real thing, that's the real deal. You know, that if you go there, then I think everyone else will kind of follow.
Yeah.
The journeys, the story of friendship of Woodrow, having his word is his honor, is his bond. He says, leave him here, I'll come back to pick him up in the spring. And the pallbearer says, that's an awful long time, and Texas is a long way, son. You sure you don't want to just pay $10 and bury him? And Woodrow says, I gave my word. That coffin will be here in spring, right? Yes, sir, it will. And that, to me, that's everything, is your word. Is your word, is your honor, your integrity, and that's my favorite.
Yeah. And also, I feel like Tommy Jones is the closest we're going to get to a cowboy. Like, a modern, you know what I mean? Like, look at all his performances. Like, even, like, The Fugitive, he's a sheriff.
Yep.
Like,
Marshal.
A marshal. Yeah, sorry, a marshal, yeah. That's right. But, I mean, I'm like, and everything he does, like, the Three Burials of Macchiato Estrada, it's a modern Western, and he's...
No Country.
Yeah. Same thing. He's, like, when you, like, say, like, oh... He's a man, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, he's like the real deal. Yeah. Good pick. Didn't see that coming. But
I could talk about Lonesome Dove for hours, so I'll just keep it short, but I could go on.
Jenny, your recap and your number one.
All right. So 5 was The Quick and the Dead, 4 Oklahoma, 3 Back to the Future Part 3, 2 Desperado, and my number one is Blazing Saddles.
Ooh, nice. I did not see that coming.
I saw it coming because I sneaked a peek at her.
Oh, your really? List. Cheat.
Pretty funny movie.
Yeah. And like I said, I like your picks. They're stuff that...
Different.
Yeah, I would have never thought of putting that stuff. Just because I'm like, yeah. And I'm glad you put it on there. Amazingly funny. I feel like I've said it once and I'll keep saying it. Like, nowadays... what's the director? I'm drawing a blank here. Mel Brooks could not get a movie greenlit anywhere in this town.
I completely agree.
It's so like, it's so fucking like PC. Like, you got to be PC about everything, that I feel like movies are important, just as important as any other movie. And I'm glad he got a chance to make them. And yeah, this would never get greenlit nowadays.
No,
it's like, you want to do
no
what? Way.
Wait, no, is this way. A black sheriff? What?
Yeah. or if it did get greenlit, it would be highly watched, controversial. It would, you know, all that stuff.
Robert Downey would be the lead.
Yeah. Right.
The dude playing the dude. This guy's about another dude.
But yeah, this is a good pick. We've talked about this movie before, too.
I love it.
And I agree. I love it. I love everybody in it. Mm-hmm. Gene Wilder is amazing.
You got to be careful who you watch it with.
Yeah.
You really do.
You got to know your friends.
You really do.
Yeah.
Wait, you have friends who don't like Blazing Saddles? They shouldn't be your friends.
Bam. Yeah, that's the law right there, spoken by Adam. Fear the beard.
we Jenny, you and I got a chance to see this with Mel Brooks Q&A. Mm-hmm. And he was saying how the Gene Wilder's character was a different actor. And he got stuck doing another movie, couldn't do Blazing Saddles. And it was like a couple days till they start shooting. And literally Gene Wilder had to learn his lines like with a 2 days like notice. Like, he's like, all right, I'll do it. And he had just stepped up to the plate. And
well, if anyone was amazing. Can do it,
yeah.
Gene could do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Gene can do
yeah.
it,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Gene Wilder is one of those guys where I'm like, is this guy still alive? All the time.
He is.
Yes. No matter.
He just doesn't work a lot.
I know, I know.
I really didn't think he was.
See? It's one of those wow. things where you're like,
all right.
His wife died.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
still alive.
That was tragic because she was amazing and a real light on SNL when they yeah. first started.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good number one, and I'll do my recap of my number one. My number five was The Proposition, 4, Once Upon a Time in the West, 3, Unforgiven, 2, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and my number one, it's no secret, it's the Assassination of Jesse James by...
Oh, I thought you were going to do Texas Rangers.
By the coward Robert.
I thought you were going to do American Outlaws.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be American Outlaws. Yeah.
Excellent contemporary. Contemporary Western. Excellent.
Yes. I feel like I talk way too much about this movie, especially in recent days, because the new movie's coming out, Killing Them Softly. But this again, like every, all the my favorite Westerns, everything is top-notch. The score by Nick Cave and
Warren Ellis
is amazing. Like, this is one of the scores where I just pop it on my iPod if I want to get a little sad. Just pop it on.
Or introspective. Not just sad.
Yeah. Sometimes I like to go sad. But the cinematography is amazing.
I don't know how many times we're going to talk about that train shot.
Yes. Oh. The train. How many takes did it take him to do that? Because it's amazing. It's the most beautiful shot I've ever seen.
It really is. With knowing them, as many takes as it took.
And
that was it.
And this movie is the biggest proof why film has to keep. We got to keep it alive. You know what I mean? Because
absolutely,
you couldn't do that on digital. You couldn't do that train shot.
Oh yeah, with the you no. need the black.
Yeah, yeah.
Film for that yeah. deep dark inky black.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And just the whole movie itself, the acting, everybody is amazing. All the people that are in this movie that were like, yes, I want to be part of this.
Freaking Casey Affleck, that guy.
Yes.
Is nuts. Nuts. Awesome.
This is another movie where I saw Q&A for this movie, and. Because he wanted it from the beginning. Like, he saw this script and he's like, I want to do this. I want to work with this director as well. And he fought for it. And he had Brad Pitt lobbying for him. And it still was a struggle to get him on this movie. And he was amazing in it. He should have won an Oscar for this movie.
You're talking about Brad Pitt was voting for Casey Affleck to come?
Yes, yes. And he still was having a hard time getting on this show.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love hearing those stories. Yeah.
And just everybody who was in this, Sam Rockwell. Jeremy Renner.
Mm-hmm. Garrett Dillahunt.
Yeah. Garrett Dillahunt.
Paul Schneider.
Schneider.
Mary Louise Parker. Sam Shepard.
Sam Shepard. And just how this is a great, like, poetic view on the Western. It's just a great... It's so... Just the way it was filmed. The hand-cranked cameras they had to use mm-hmm. to get that, like, shuddery feel to it. Mm-hmm. How the sides are off focus. Everything is amazing in this movie. And I have to say, one of Brad Pitt's best performances. It's just so simple. He's like doing nothing. He's just like,
he has that stillness that you love within his character.
Yes.
And it's eerie and disconcerting here.
And scary.
Yeah, very scary.
Yeah.
And then this was just a good year for Casey Affleck.
Yes. Yeah, this was a year of Gone Baby Gone, yeah. And just
he was so good in that.
That scene, the scene that makes me really uncomfortable is where he's Casey Affleck saying the things that they have in common. He's like, you have two younger brothers, and he's like, you're like, oh man, this guy's gonna get shot in the face, man. You're like so scared for him. But yeah, and just how like it's photographed. You see every type of weather in that movie. You see the scene in the snow is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And reminds me of Jeremiah Johnson, but honorable mention.
Dude, total honorable mention.
Yeah. Kevin, what is your number one?
Okay, recap. Number 5 was The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, 4, Dead Man, 3, Unforgiven, 2, Rio Bravo, and my number 1 was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
There you go. Adam.
All right. Number 5 was Silverado. Number 4 was The Long Riders. Number 3 was Maverick. Number 2 was Dances with Wolves. And my number 1 is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, I'm glad you put that on there.
I had to.
Yeah.
Had to. This is... I don't even know where to start with this movie. I mean, we talked about how screenplay wise.
Yeah, we talked it's like during
one
the noir.
One
films.
Of the top
yeah.
three.
Chinatown and
Chinatown,
this movie.
This, and yeah. what was the other one that we said?
I forgot what the third one was.
Casablanca.
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 Yes.
Yeah, the screenplay, great. You
learned so much this about is one characters. Of the three, like, Bibles yeah. to screenwriting.
Like you don't even need to read a book about screenwriting. Just no. find the screenplay
exactly.
and read it.
Yeah. William Golden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, Robert Redford and Paul Newman
yeah.
at the top of their game, switching characters at the last minute where they wanted them to play the opposite characters.
Yes.
And I can't even imagine them having the other roles. They're just so yeah. perfect for the roles that they yeah. have in this. And then the opening in the when he's like scoping out the bank and they've redone it. I remember the first time I saw this still, I was like, what's happening? I didn't understand. What's the case in the joint, but it's all closed off and
yeah.
it's a beautiful scene and just the color of the film. And then, I mean, the cinematography
and just how it starts with that sepia tone.
Yeah.
The first scene. And then, mm-hmm.
I mean, even further back than that, during the credits, the yeah. music, that little bare, sparse piano.
Is it Burt Bacharach? I know Burt Bacharach did the song, but I'm not sure if he did the score.
Oh, you're talking about Raindrops Are Falling on My
yeah,
Head?
Yeah, he wrote that, but I don't know
he
if he did the score.
He wrote it, he didn't sing it.
He didn't, yeah. yeah.
I don't know if he did the score, but during the music, that very minimalistic sort of ragtime-esque yes. piano sound over the old-timey footage
yeah.
is just great. And, I mean, it just kind of warms you up, and you just sit back and enjoy this movie about pals.
Yeah.
And the hole in the wall gang, and they're so great. And then like the explosion and the train
yes.
and just everything all the way to the end.
There's no,
I'm not going to lie. I've never seen Lonesome Dove,
but oh.
I know it's bad. It's on my list. It's on my bucket list of things to see, but just the, cause I feel like I've had this story spoiled for me. So I have to forget the story before I can go watch Lonesome Dove. But it's just like that one of the saddest. It's because it seems like a very sad story. Lonesome Dove does.
It's the end will definitely it'll hit you
and
because it's about friends.
Yeah.
Just hearing about Lonesome Dove makes me think of Butch Cassidy and the ending of that. Just the way they go out together.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I don't know if it's
kinda,
on the same level,
yeah.
but it's
different.
It's
yeah,
a downer. It's sad. But there, I mean, there's.
It's funny
a
because
silver lining because they go out together.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert,
yeah.
by the way. After and, the fact,
yeah.
if you haven't seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Well, and it's just the way they do it. Like they could have shown, they could have done like Bonnie and Clyde style,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't. They're like, you know what? We're gonna cut right at that moment, and we're just gonna hear the sound effects, mm-hmm. and it's an awesome ending.
I'm really glad they didn't go Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah,
dark
me too.
With this.
Me too. Yeah,
I love the levity of
yeah.
this movie. I mean, especially the Raindrops Are Falling on My Head
yeah.
scene, or the scene
where
the guy's trying
for the gang.
Fights for the gang. He's like, there's no rules in a knife fight.
He's like, all right, call it up. 1, 2, 3.
But the scene where the guy, the sheriff, is trying to round up a posse, and the guy starts trying to sell bikes.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I just, it's such a great, fun movie.
Yeah. This is a really cool movie, and again, there's no single line that's said that is not needed. Like, you need every single piece of dialogue in that movie. Paul Newman, this, and Cool Hand Luke, mm-hmm. the best.
Well, interesting how he kind of took Redford a little bit under his wing, too, because Redford was fairly fresh during
yeah.
this time, and commentary I saw where... I think it was, I can't remember where I saw it, but basically whenever that train jump happened,
mm-hmm.
whenever Redford jumped onto the train, that was Redford jumping on the train. That wasn't a stunt double.
Okay.
And then Newman came up and said, he goes, don't be a wise guy. Don't be a hot shot. And Redford took it like, what do you mean? Like, what are you trying to say? And he's like, I'm trying to say, I don't want to lose a co-star. Let the stunt guys do their job kind of thing. But it was just so interesting because when you really watch it again, you get to see Redford and his bright-eyed kind of like, I mean, he's acting his socks off and he's doing great, but you see that he's excited to be
yeah.
there and he's, you know, right there under Paul Newman, who's a freaking icon.
Yeah.
So it's a great movie in that sense, too.
Yeah.
I see shades of Redford's Sundance in Brad Pitt's Jesse
yes.
James.
Yeah. I see that.
But just the poker scene. Mm-hmm. Where he's like, yes, he has to stay. Then we can go.
Yeah.
Like that, just under the surface, still waters.
Yeah.
Deep, you know, yeah. It's great.
Oh, man. We should watch this movie right now. All right. Well, that
Lonesome
was...
Lonesome Dove.
Yeah, that was your number one, right?
That was my number one.
All right, let's do quickly some honorable mentions. Let's throw them out there. Rick, what do you got?
All right, well, we've already mentioned Unforgiven. We've already mentioned The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. We've already mentioned The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. But I'm going to throw two others out. Little Big Man.
Nice.
Saw I it dig. Probably about 3 weeks ago. Again.
For the again. Okay.
And funny.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
But mixed with violence and pain and yes. seeing them torch the villages and the native women and stab them and the baby. I mean, it was grotesque, but at the same time, you'd see 5 minutes later, you'd see something funny happen. And then you see the old chief just kind of have this blissful, peaceful kind of state. And you saw Dustin Hoffman become enraged. I mean, really enraged, but under the scope of it, you couldn't really fully get into the rage of him because it was kind of a lighter, I don't know, there were just comedic moments, so you never knew where it was coming from.
Yeah, yeah. This, it's interesting. I saw this as an adult. I didn't catch that, you know, and I really like it. And I do agree that I love the fact that it could be so funny at times, but then make you really uncomfortable, like really uncomfortable. Yeah. But yeah, good pick. What else you got in your list?
I've got Red River. The Rio Bravo sparked it. Red River, so awesome how John Wayne and Montgomery Clift, one of his first acting roles with John Wayne and that whole scene, and how Montgomery is, he's just this little buck 50 kind of dude, but he goes toe-to-toe with the Duke, and you see it. He doesn't back down one inch, and his little mount that he does in that movie, he does this kind of little crow hop mount that I have just, I don't even know how he does it. It's not the way I mount a horse, but he does this little crow hop where he literally jumps up, throws his foot in, and just like makes it effortless, the way he just pops up on the horse. And he just dismounts, mounts, dismounts, mounts, just so quickly with this little hop he does. But great acting all around and just great storytelling and a sense of justice of how the trail is run by this iron-fisted, you know, trail boss, which is like, look, you're this far out. Like, you do what I say. Once you got out on the trail that far, it was like, look, that boss that you thought was okay might turn out to be a real asshole. But you know what? You can't just quit because you got to go through natives. You got to go through terrain alone. You're in for the long haul. So it kind of sucked in that aspect. And I think they really captured that.
Neat. What else do you have? Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
That's it. Jenny?
Nope.
You're like, I've only seen five. You barely got five, guys. Really quick, Three Amigos. Mm-hmm. What does it say? It's amazing. It's funny. Three dudes get thrown into a Western.
How many times have we talked about Three Amigos?
There's no need to talk about it.
A plethora.
A plethora.
A plethora.
He's a guapo man of your intellect.
Yeah, I feel like every time it gets brought up, you guys just do quotes the entire time. I don't think you ever say anything about the movie. You just do quotes.
We should just do like an episode of the podcast where we reenact like the whole
the radio
audio.
Version.
Yeah,
could easily do it.
Yeah. Jeremiah Johnson, I brought up earlier, and
I think that was an $80,000 budget. If I'm not mistaken, it was something like
it was
that.
Like really, really
shot
amazing
in
low.
Utah. Yeah. They had the Utah parks and recreate like work with him. Awesome, awesome. One man in the wilderness. Great.
Yeah, yeah, and. The movie I just rewatched it twice this weekend because of this list. Open Range. I love this movie. Didn't quite make my list just because I had so many number ones.
I have to say, Open Range, I was not a fan of. The only thing I did like, well, I obviously loved Robert Duvall. Mm. I love that Kevin Costner financed it for $27 million. That he built a town.
Yeah.
He was up against the grind, and he was like, "No, fuck, we're gonna keep moving. We're gonna make this movie." So I applaud him for that. I thought.
What don't you like about this movie?
Kevin Costner.
Really?
Yeah. I thought his character was very just flat. I mean, Robert Duvall, you see scenes where he's trying to reach out and he's trying to, you know, do his, you know, just trying to reach the guy.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't be reached. And you just didn't, it was like, you gotta have more dimension than that. It seemed like it was, I don't know if ego is the right word, but it just didn't seem like there was no depth.
For me, the two people that kind of like make this movie for me, Diego Luna, I've always been a fan of his and I dig this. Great. Robert Duvall is amazing in this. Just so simple. So, but the guy who like every time I see the scene, it kind of gets me a little weepy. Michael Jeter. He plays the guy and he runs the. I'm drawing a blank here. Were you the stable?
Mm-hmm. Delivery?
And, yeah. And he was reading Kevin Costner's letter where he says, if I die, sell my saddle, my horse, and buy this thing. And like he's like crying. And that wasn't part of the script. That wasn't, it was just, hey, just read this thing. And like just the fact that he got so much out of that letter. That scene kind of stands out for me.
I loved how Kevin Costner showed up, and this is my favorite part. And I loved Kevin Costner in this scene where he came up, and that one guy, the head villain, the guy that's on Sons of Anarchy. I don't know his name,
but
he
Kim came. Coates.
Yeah,
Kim Coates. He's Kim my Coates. Favorite part.
He's in Waterworld. He's that's a paper.
I always think of him as the last Boy Scout when he's like, he's like, you touch me again, I'll kill you. He's like, Bumba, baby, and he like puts his nose through his brain and kills him.
Yep, good old Kim Coates.
It's like. Told you. Whenever he shows up all badass and cocky, he's like, yeah. He goes, you kill my friend? He goes, yeah. And he fucking shoots him right in the head.
Yeah.
Bam. First guy done. Fucking awesome. I was like, fuck yeah. No duel, no nothing. Awesome. You're dead. You fucked up. You killed somebody. You're dead. Yeah. Bam. Awesome. Yeah.
The last shootout of this movie reminds me of one of my other honorable mentions, Pale Rider.
Yes.
Oh,
that's great. I just like how a lot of Westerns will use like quarter loads when they're doing the shootouts and then do it in post. They were using full load blanks, and it just makes a big difference because it's like it's a booming sound and it's like nice and hearty as opposed to them redubbing it in post.
Well, what I learned about on Dead Men working with some of the armors is you have quarter loads, you have three-fourths, three-quarter loads, all that stuff, and you can put WD-40 in the barrel to cause a smoke.
Okay.
So I didn't know. I mean, I'm a big fan of just put it in post, but Roy was like, no, we have to have the shot, the projectile. I'm like, okay.
And that's it. That's basically it. Kevin?
Johnny Guitar, Joan Crawford, Sterling Hayden. Mm-hmm. Awesome. High Noon.
I was going to say, I was really surprised I didn't show up on anybody's list.
I thought it was definitely going to make somebody's list, but I'm glad it made the honorable mention.
I think we're going to get a letter about that, aren't we?
Yeah.
Why'd you put High Noon on High Noon?
I do love High Noon, but I really
thought...
Look,
I thought we had to make room for Back to the Future 3, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Hello.
That's right.
Oklahoma. Don't send us your fucking letters.
High Plains Drifter.
Yep.
Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
Yep.
Yeah.
And The Wild Bunch.
I was really expecting The Wild Bunch and High Noon to pop up on some list.
Yeah.
But I was wrong. McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Mm.
Yes.
I really like. It's kind of an anti-Western.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's one of my few Robert Altman movies that I love. I just really like how kooky it is. It's weird.
It is, but and it's Warren Beatty, so good.
Yeah, I saw a print of it on the big screen, and just how scratched and fucked up the print was just added to it for me. Because like Vilmos Zsigmond, he was a cinematographer, and like they flashed the film, and just having a fucked up, having a scratched negative of the or a print of the film that you're watching when it's already a film that's been flashed, it just helps add to the ambiance that they're going for, and I loved it. Pale Rider, which I love. Mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood as the priest. And City Slickers.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And then everything else everyone else has talked about.
Yeah. And everything Clint Eastwood. Except every Western.
This stuff I haven't seen.
Yeah.
I really need to see Lonesome Dove. Yeah. I feel bad. Like
you
I need to read
must.
It and see it.
It's almost like a full, I kid you not, it's because it's 2 hours, it's a 8 hour because it's a mini series. Yeah. Literally, just give a Lonesome Dove day and just stay in, turn off your phone, and watch it from start to finish.
I might have to.
You will be bawling, curled up like a child, and I will come save you.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
We'll watch it with you. All right, so let's give out the plugs again. Deadmentheseries.com is where you find all the links. You could also go to our website, thelistfilmpodcast.com. All the links will be there. Friend them on Facebook. What do you know the Facebook thing?
Yeah, if you just go onto Facebook and you literally put Dead Men the Series, it'll pop up. Saddle Creek Films, it should pop up. Also with Google, Dead Men, the series, it'll pop right up.
And type in that on Vimeo and you'll see the trailer, but you can go to our website or deadmentheseries.com and you'll find the trailer there.
And the series premieres the 26th, correct?
Yeah, the 26th of September. It's going to be released. There's going to be every episode is going to be released on Wednesday. So it'll follow for the next 9 weeks after that.
And is this going to be rain or shine, or depending if you guys get a distribution?
Now, that's a possibility. I mean, if we end up, we'll obviously let everyone know. Yeah. But if we get a distribution deal and, I don't know, Fox says, we want to feature this on our site and we want to release it in November, whatever, then we'll let people know. But we'll also have more time to cut an in-depth trailer, further trailer too. So,
yeah. So check that out. Rick, where can people find you? Like, if they wanted to go, no, what's Rick doing next?
Well,
I want to hear more of his voices.
Okay.
Hello.
Give us a little bit. Give us a little Shia LaBeouf.
Sure.
It's like, everybody, no. Okay. Hey, Mojo, out of the room. Okay, this is my room. Get out. Get. You're on crack. Get out of here. Michael, give me a minute. I'm preparing for my role. Michael, give me a minute. I know Optimus behind me. He has to take a piss. He's just gonna have to hold it.
Where can people find your voices at?
That's my secret. There's two secret passions I have. One is doing voiceover in cartoons, and the other is musical theater. I'm actually a baritone, so you believe it's second tenor. So I'm not going to sing. It's not going to happen. Okay. But it's a hidden passion to do some musicals eventually. So, but you can find, if you go to www.rickmaddox.com, I have my reels on there.
Rick with no K, right?
Just yep.
R-I-C.
It's like rice without the E.
Yeah.
So RICMADDOX.com. Also on Facebook, it's hard to find me, but if you leave comments on the Dead Men, the series Facebook page, if you leave any, I read all the comments. So if you say, hey, Rick, love the podcast, add me, whatever, I can totally do that. And then for rickmaddox.com, there's not really a way to contact other than that. Just there's the deadmentheseries@gmail.com that you can contact off the website, and that'll go to one of our PR people, and the PR person will get it to me. So that's another way to do it.
Awesome. And if you want to follow us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/thelistfilmpodcast.com. We're on the Twitter. Yeah, we're on the Twitter, guys. Yay. It's at the film podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
I'm at Janae, JEHNEIGH.
I'm at An Adam Scott, AN_AdamScott.
And I'm at K Zuberbier, that's ZUBERBIER.
And I'm at Saddle Creek Film.
Nice. There you go. Follow them, and they'll give you all the information on. That's a good way to follow. If you guys follow Saddle Creek, you could find out if it gets moved, the release.
Absolutely.
And what else? If you're going to buy something off Amazon, why not throw us a couple shekels by clicking on our link on our website, thelistfilmpodcast.com. You're going to go to buy something on Amazon, and you're like, I'm going to go buy this book. I'm going to go buy Lonesome Dove, the miniseries, or the book.
They probably have a box set.
Yeah. Click through our website, click on the little link, and guess what? Amazon's going to throw a couple shekels our way, Western style, and then we're going to go off and buy more equipment.
I hope they don't throw it in the spittoon.
Oh, yeah. They're going to do that. They're like, fish it out, jerks.
With a gold nugget at the bottom of the spit.
Yeah. So do that if you're into Amazon. What else? You could follow for more in-depth reviews of movies and all that stuff. Go to Adam's website, shootingthescript.com, or you could follow him on...
Oh, wait. I don't even know. Are you talking about Twitter again?
I'm talking about MoviePass.
Blog.moviepass.com.
Because they could follow you on there.
They can.
You could click on your name and just follow all your reviews. Could.
This is true.
The fuck is up with MoviePass, dude?
What?
Are they going to go live? What's going to happen with this?
They're still not live?
They're still not.
I think it is live because I don't think it says beta anymore.
Really?
I don't work for that part of them. I just work for the blog. I don't work for the MoviePass part of it.
You don't work for the man.
Yeah, I don't work for the man.
All right.
I write for the man.
Okay. So there you go.
They're not the man. They're hooking you up.
I guess.
Unlimited movies in theaters for like $30. That's a steal.
MoviePass.com.
Yeah.
So there you go. Follow us. Follow Rick. You know, if you really want, you could probably email him and he'll kind of like do your voicemail at Shia LaBeouf. If you really want it.
No. call me back. It's like, gotta call me back right now. I'm running out of breath.
All right. There you go. Until next time, have a good week.